श्री अद्वैतगदाधर श्रीवासादि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण कृष्ण हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्ण कृष्ण हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्ण कृष्ण हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे ॐ महाय प्रतिबोधितं भगवतं नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन ग्रथितं पुराणमुनिनां मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीं भगवतीं अष्टादशाध्यायिनीम् अम्ब त्वा मनुसंददामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वेषिणीम् नमोऽस्तु ते व्यास विशाल बुद्धे पुल्लारविन्दाय तपत्रनेत्र येन त्वया भारत तैलपूर्णं प्रज्वालितो ज्ञानमय प्रदीपम् प्रपन्न पारिजाताय स्तोत्रवेत्रैकबाणये ज्ञानमुद्राय कृष्णाय गीतामृतमहे नमः सौवंशतो गावो दोग्धा गोपालनन्दन आर्थो वंशसुतीर्भोक्ता दुग्धं गीतामृतं महत् वसुदेवसुतं देवं कंसचाणूरमर्दनं देवकी परमानन्दं कृष्णं वन्दे जगद्गुरुं विष्णुद्रोणकटाधयद्रतजला गान्धारनीलोत्पला शल्यग्राहवती कृपेण वहनी कर्णेन वेलाकुला अश्वत्थामा विकर्णघोरमकरा दुर्योधनावर्तिनी सुतीर्ण खलु पाण्डवैरणनदी कैवर्तकेशव पाराशर्यवचः सरोजममलं गीतार्थगन्धोत्कटं नानाख्यानकेसरं हरिकथा सम्बोधनाबोधितम् लोके सज्जनशल्पदैरहरहप्येवीयमानं मुदा भूयाद्भारतपङ्कजकलिमलप्रध्वंसिनश्रेयसे मृगं करोति वाचालं बन्धुं लङ्घयदे गिरिं यल्कृपानमहं वन्दे परमानन्दमाधवम् यं ब्रह्मा वरुणेन्द्ररुद्रमरुदस्त्वन्वन्दिदिव्यैस्तवे वेदे साङ्गपदेर्क्रमोपनिषदेर्गायन्तीयं सामगाः ज्ञानावस्थितगद्गदेन मनसा पश्यन्तीयं योगिनो यस्यान्दं न विदुःसुरासुरगणै देवाय तस्मै नमः
So, this chapter, 15th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, is called Purushottama Yoga. That's the name in Sanskrit, isn't it? Proper addressed as the Yoga of the Supreme Person, or Purushottama Yoga, that's the name. Purushottama Yoga means it is Krishna's words, direct words. For example, Vedam Vedam or Shastram, for example, Vedam, it taken a personal form. In the form of a person, when you address it as is Krishna. Vedam is Krishna. Krishna is not different from Vedam. Isn't it? And the topic of discussion in Vedam is also Krishna. Atma, Krishna, whichever way you like to call it. But Vastu is the same, one substance that is discussed in the Vedam. And Krishna, out of his compassion for the devotees, gave this Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita was spoken out of compassion to the devotees. And in this chapter, Krishna is going to talk about himself. So far, Krishna has spoken in an indirect way, is it not? Indirect, it was spoken about Krishna, but spoken in different, from different angles. Like if you look at other chapters, you will see Krishna presented himself through three modes of material nature, through Pragati Purusha Vivekananda, and a nature, enjoyer, consciousness, and opulence of the Absolute. If you look at every chapter, it was an indirect representation of Krishna, not directly saying Krishna who he is. But in this chapter, Krishna is going to talk about himself, his own Swarupa, what he is. And that Purushottama, Purushottama means supreme person or the best among the persons, his own symptom is Purushottama Yoga. Purushottama Yoga means his own symptoms. So that is why when this Bhagavad Gita's Bhashyam was written, commentary was written, in the preface or what they call Ubodghatam, Acharya Swamiji mentions there that samasta vedartha sara sangraha bhudham. Samasta vedartha sara sangraha bhudham. That is how he mentioned about this Bhagavad Gita. In other words, that the meaning of Vedam, Vedam's meaning of Vedam. And because if you summarize Vedam, the final goal of the Vedam is Krishna. Final goal of the Vedam is Krishna. Whichever way you approach it, whether through Jnana Margam, Yoga Margam, Bhakti Margam, or Karma Margam, whichever way you approach, finally the goal is Krishna. Finally, the goal is Krishna. So that is why that here, what is actually Krishna's Swarupam? Krishna's Swarupam. What is that Swarupam? And Bhagavad Gita is doing that. Krishna's Swarupam is talking about that in this chapter. For example, so in Valmiki's Ramayanam, there is a verse there. Why Ramayanam was written? Why Ramayanam was created? Reason Ramayanam was created was because Ramchandra, Lord Ramchandra appeared. Therefore Ramayanam has to take birth. In order to explain who is Ramchandra, Ramayanam was born. Ramayanam was born. So that is why Ramayanam also appeared along with Ramchandra. Veda Vedye Pare Pumsi Jade Dasharadalmaji Veda Prajedasa Masit Sakshad Ramayan Almana. That means Veda Vedyam. Veda Vedya Pare Pumsi. That all person who is discussed in the Vedam, which is also Ramachandra, Supreme Person, Purushottama. Jade Dasharada Almaji. He was born as King Dasharada's son. At that time, Vedam as incarnated as Ramayana. Vedam has come as Ramayana. They are all personalities and we address them both ways, in a personal form as well as impersonal form. So when Ramachandra came as Dasharatha's son, Vedam appeared as Ramayana. Vedam appeared as Ramayana. So Ramayanam is not different from Ramachandra. Ramachandra and Ramayanam was not different. Similarly, in Bhagavatam also we say the same thing, isn't it? Srimad Bhagavadakhyoyam Pratyaksha Krishnamevahi Svigrudosi Mayanatha Muktyartham Bhavasagari. So, Krishna is not different from Bhagavatam in the same way. Krishna is not different from Bhagavata. So similarly, all great devotees, they have acknowledged this, that the Shastram and the personality, they are not different. Personality are not different. Ramchandra appeared, Ramayana appeared. Krishna appeared, Bhagavatam appeared. They have to appear because Bhagavatam is Krishna, not different from Krishna. In the among the all the 9 months, the great devotees of Shiva, Manikyavachaka was there, a famous personality. Appar, Sambandar, Sundara, Manikyavachaka. The four major Shiva's devotees. Out of them, Manikyavachaka wrote like he wrote famous famous prayers to Lord Shiva. His prayers were very, very famous. And the difference from Manikyavachaka to others was that Appars and Sundarars and others' prayers, they were written. They were written. And they were available for others. Tevaram, they were called for others to read. And his their disciples wrote it down and kept it for others to sing in later years. But Manikyavachaka wasn't like that. He was such a personality. He kept singing about Shiva, Shiva's glories. But at the same time, he never wrote down anything, any of his creations. He never kept it in writing. So that is why he had never had the desire to keep it in stock in writing or to propagate it. That desire wasn't there in him. He just was in ecstatic mood about singing about Shiva, which he did all the time. So he used to go to all the famous Shiva temples and sing the glories of Shiva there. But nobody wrote it down. So many he sung. Every deity he addressed and he sang in a very heartfelt manner, glorifying Shiva there. So from the heart he sang that. So what you can see there is that they sang from their heart. That is what that Krishna got inside and made them to sing, in other words. Or Shiva got inside and made them to sing. Like Dhruva Maharaj says there in the Bhagavadam, Yo Andha Pravishya, one who got inside me, Mama Vacham Imam Prasuptam, and made me to speak, he says. Dhruva, 5-year-old boy, he couldn't glorify Krishna. So what did Krishna do? He got inside and made him to speak. That is Dhruva Stuti in the Bhagavadam. Is actually it is Krishna who is saying, but inside from Dhruva. That's the prayers. Yonda pravishya mama vacha mimam prasuptam sanjeevayati agila shakti dhara sudhamnam anyamscha hasta charana sharvana tugadin pranan namo bhagavade purushaya dubhyam. It's the first verse in the Dhruva Stuti where Dhruva is saying that you got inside me and by who entering inside me I was able to speak. That is how he begins his prayers. Mama vacha mimam prasuptam sanjeevayati agila shakti dhara sudhamnam. Gave the power to all my senses to operate. Anyamsham hasta charana shravana togadi. Hands, legs and ears, everything are operated by you. Pranan namo bhagavate. And that pranan inside, like you who have entered in me, are all just the pranan namo bhagavate purushayatubhyam. He mentions that. So he got inside and encouraged Dhruva to sing there. And similarly, in Manikyavachaka's case also, after for many, many years, he wandered around in all the famous Shiva temples. And finally, one day he reached Chidambaram. He reached Chidambaram temple. So he was staying there and he was singing about Shiva continuously. Big, huge temple that is, a lot of places there. So he used to sit in a corner in one of the halls there and sing about Chidambaranath, which is Lord Shiva. He used to sing about him. And nobody wrote it down because he was always alone. He used to wander alone. So one day while he was sitting and singing there, a very, very old person came to see him. Very old person. A Brahmana, old Brahmana, big belly, tread on him. And but he was so old he needed a stick to walk. He needed a stick to walk. And he came there and he came and asked him, are you Manikyavachaka? He asked Manikyavachaka. And Manikyavachaka said, yes, I am. I am Manikyavachaka. He said. So he says to him, I've heard that you have compiled a lot of songs glorifying Shiva in the past, and apparently so many devotees are singing about them and about bhakti, about knowledge and all other things, and I have heard a few of them and I wanted to hear that right from your own face now. That is why I had come. Please sing some songs about Shiva, he said to him. So at that time Manikyavajara was chanting the holy name, Shiva's holy name he was chanting. And he says to him, I don't know, I'm also getting very old, I can't remember anything, he said. But whatever is in my memory, I will sing, he said. I never wrote it down anything. Whatever I remember, I will sing, he said. So the old man says to him, okay, start singing, he said. And he started singing. Manikyavajara started singing the song. And whatever he has sung before, they all started flowing very freely from inside Manikyavajara. And it was a state, like in the Bhagavatam, you will see that Vedavyasa Maharshi, Sri Narada Maharshi told Vedavyas that Samadhina Anusmarat Vicheshtidam. That right Srimad Bhagavatam, he said, go into the Samadhi state and it will keep coming. You don't have to worry about it. And it in Samadhi state, it will come freely, he said. So in that Samadhi state, Samadhina Anusmarat Vicheshtidam, in the Bhagavatam you can see that. In Samadhi state, you remember Krishna and the songs will come from there, he said. So in that Samadhi state, he sat down and he started singing from the Samadhi state. Manikyavajara started singing. So when you start singing in the Samadhi state, it is an amazing bhavam inside, isn't it? That Samadhi state, Samadhi bhavam it is. Eh? And in that Samadhi bhavam, he cannot remember anything what was happening in that Samadhi state. He couldn't remember anything what was happening. So in that meditation mood or Samadhi state when he was singing, he sang for a long time. And when he opened his eyes, the old man was gone. Old man wasn't there. But what he thought, that old man must be got tired of my singing and that's why he has gone. He thought like that. So old man, the old person, he wrote down everything, what he heard, what he was singing. And next day, the things went as usual. And in the next day, when the head of the pujari came to open the deity room, right in front of the door of the deity room, there was a book there. And it was written there that the there was a few flowers also on top of that. And it written like this, that Manikyavajara had sung these songs and Chidambaranadar, that means Lord Shiva himself, has written it down. These are the songs, and the book was lying right in front of the deity room. So pujari, when he came, he didn't want to open the door straight away because this book was right in front of that. Naturally, in them days, the kings owned the temples. So they had a total control on the temples and authority. So first thing they have to do is to inform the king who was ruling the temple at that time. And when they informed the king, king said, please bring him down, Manikyavajara, if he is around here somewhere. So, and they brought him there. When he came there, because it's been sung by Manikyavajara and it was written by Lord Shiva, Chidambaranath himself, the king said, Manikyavajara should explain these songs to us, what he has sung. And he should give us a commentary on that. So they all went there and with musical instruments and all other accompaniments, they invited Manikyavajara to come in front of Nataraja. That is what the form of Shiva there, Nataraja form, the dancing form of Shiva. And he says to him that you have to explain to us this song. The king told Manikyavajara. Manikyavajara says to him that looking at Lord Shiva inside, he says, similar, just like if you keep Bhagavad Gita under Krishna's lotus feet, what will it be? It was the same situation there. So, when he told him to explain those songs, Manikyavajara looked at Lord Shiva and he told everyone there that the commentary on these songs what I have written is standing there in that form. That's the commentary for this book. Just like if you ask Bhagavad Gita what is commentary, commentary is Krishna. Krishna is the commentary for Bhagavad Gita. So when he said that, after saying this, he fell down, paid his obeisances, and he left his body there. Left his body there at that time. So the reason why I was saying this story was that that here, Bhagavad Gita has two meanings. What we normally call it as Lakshyartham and Vachyartham. Two different things. Vachyartham is easy. Vachyartham is what happens in the college, university and all that. Is Vachyartham. Lakshyartham is the realization from Bhagavad Gita. Two different things. Vachyartham is like this. This is spoken normally in the Vedantam. They make it like this. Vachyartham and Lakshyartham. Vachyartham, for example, if you know the language well, Sanskrit language well, then you can find out the Vachyartham of the book. Vachyartham is possible. Any book, for that matter. If you know the language well, you can understand that. Lakshyartham cannot be covered in the words. With the words, you cannot explain the Lakshyartham. Lakshyartham and Vachyartham, there's a big difference like that. Just like sugar, we say, Vachyartham is, it's a very sweet thing. It's a very sweet thing. And if you put a little bit of that in the mouth, you will feel the sweetness of the mouth. And that sweetness, what you experience when you put it in the mouth, is Lakshyartham. Vachyartham is the explanation to that. So, Vachyartham and Lakshyartham are the two things, two sides of the Shastra. One is Vachyartham, other one is Lakshyartham. Vachyartham is what you explain through words. Lakshyartham is what you realize and experience within yourself. So, knowledge, jnanam, bhakti and self-realization, all of these things are knowing oneself. These are all the Lakshyartham of Bhagavad Gita. Lakshyartham of Bhagavad Gita. So, pursuing that, what you call it as anusandhanam. Anusandhanam means that you realize what is spoken in the book, you realize it, experience it yourself, and you are pursuing it regularly. And that is bhakti. That bhakti. And that is why anubhuti or pursuing that itself is jnanam or bhakti in other words. And that is self-realization. So, Bhagavad Gita's goal is experiencing self-realization. Not analyzing the verses, how many verses, who spoke, where spoke, which year spoke, and who spoke, how many verses, all these are not relevant to us. Important Lakshyartham is that after studying Bhagavad Gita, have you realized the self? That is Lakshyartham. So realization of the self, that is a goal. So in two ways you can study this Bhagavad Gita. One is Vachyartham, which means that taking every word, breaking up the words, and then taking every word and studying it with for grammar, grammatical side of it, and keeping the grammar important, and every words you can break it up into words, just like they do in the university. That is how this Shastram is taught there. So, there are people who do research in Bhagavad Gita, in the university. They do research work there. They will take each and every verse and they will break it down. Similarly, they will also concern about how many verses are there, 700 verses in the Bhagavad Gita. And they will say, as they, all the verses are spoken in Kurukshetram, who spoke how many verses, they tabulate all that, things like that. They study it in that way. So, they are also questioned whether when Krishna was spoken, were there 18 chapters in the Bhagavad Gita. This hasn't stopped. Even today it is going on. Recently we read in the paper there was somebody in Delhi, I think, someone, he has written a book, Bhagavad Gita as it was. And he is saying, this Bhagavad Gita as it is, Prabhupada wrote, so he is saying it is not Bhagavad Gita as it was, he says. And then he has taken few chapters and he says, this is original Bhagavad Gita. The other things were added on to it. Like this, research is going on all the time. In all the Upanishads, Bhagavatam, everywhere, they do all these things. So then they ask questions, has Krishna spoke all the verses? How many has actually Krishna has spoken? And or has Vedavyas wrote it down? Some of them, his edition is there. Vedavyas edited and put it something to it. So this is called Bahiranga Parikshanam. In Shastram they call it as Bahiranga Parikshanam. Bahiranga Parikshanam means, Acharya Swami mentions in the Bhagavad Gita Subhodgadam, that Kagadanda Pariksha Rupam. That means studying Upanishads, particularly looking at the grammar and studying the verses in that way. And that is looking at the meaning of the verse and started trying to understand that. Kagadanda Pariksha Rupam means that one person was sitting alone and he thought, I have to do some research. So he couldn't find any topic for research. So what he did was, he said, let me get hold of all the crows which are flying, catch them all, and bring individually and count how many teeth they have got to continue his research work, isn't it? So similarly, all these verses were spoken in the battlefield, or these are all what is the Gita's Siddhantam. This is all Bahiranga Parikshanam. Bahiranga Parikshanam means external research, what they do outside. Internal Andariga Parikshanam, Bahirangam is opposite. Andarigam, inside what it has to do is that Bhagavad Gita, I have to experience in my life. I have to experience in my life. That is Andarigam, not external, isn't it? So, knowing well that the goal of, what is goal of Bhagavad Gita, and keeping focused on that goal all the time, about what, which means that realizing the self. That is the goal of Bhagavad Gita, isn't it? So, whether you know it or you don't know it, ultimately everybody wants to realize the self, wants to know who they are, isn't it? Knowing himself. So, without knowing oneself, our distress is not going to go away. It will continue to remain. And we want to come to an end of all our problems of life, miseries of life, and we want to become perfect. We don't have to come back to this miserable situation again. Bodily existence, identification with the body. And that is the goal of Shruti, Vedam, or Upanishads, everything. So, by knowing what, we will become perfect. And by knowing what, you don't want to know anything anymore. And what, knowing bond, you don't have anything to do afterwards. And that truth, once it wakes up inside, then our life becomes perfect. Waking up that truth inside us is the job of Vedam, Shruti, all of them. Their goal is that, to wake us up into that reality of what we are, who we are. Because at the moment, we don't know what we are, isn't it? We are identifying with the body and living in ignorance. Complete ignorance it is, existence. So, Vedam Shruti has only this one goal, to wake us up into that state where we don't feel this miseries of material body again. I don't have to come back to this material existence again. So you can see this perfection is like this. Perfection means that a lot of people in this world acquire a lot of wealth also. A lot of wealth they have acquired. They've also acquired a lot of fame and position in this world. But if you ask them, that is your life perfect now? Nobody can say that. They will not say also that, they will say that they still don't feel complete in themselves. Because that perfection hasn't happened yet. They acquired a lot of wealth, no doubt. They acquired a lot of fame in this world. And sometimes probably it has lasted for some time and they were living in that glory of the wealth or the fame or the position, whatever they hold for a few years. You can see when you observe some big leaders, after they retire, they have lost. They lost means once they lose their position. Then they are wandering around thinking, what should we do next? I can see their desperation inside. few years there were big men in this world, presidents or prime ministers or something like that. But after they have lost their, you can't hold on to that. Few years you may have it, but once you lose it, they are also lost with it. Then they are looking for what else to do in this world. That shows that that complete fulfillment is not there. The same thing with the very wealthy people also. After acquiring so much wealth, they just don't know what to do with it. And then that happiness also goes away, making more money. While making, they enjoy it, but after they made a lot, a stage comes in life, they just don't know what to do with it. Most of the time, it all ends up in problems more, and then the anxiety of preserving it worse than anything else, this all develops in them. So, you can see here that they got result, if you ask them, that they got some happiness from that for the body, and a lot of happiness for the mind also. But ultimately, the mind is falling back again into distress. Happiness and distress keeps coming back and forth in the mind, isn't it? So, the reason why I'm saying this is that perfectly nobody can say that I have reached perfection in life, that I feel that peace and shanti inside me and satisfaction, and unable to claim that. It's impossible to claim that. So, in the Upanishads, the rishis have spoken this, that this will be the state always. That, and they inquired further, where will we find that perfection? They found out that it's not possible to find that in the wealth or the fame or the name or position or anything. Where should we inquire after this? This was their inquiry. Where do we find it that will feel perfect finally? So they understood that whatever tools or instruments we have to enjoy life in this world, you can only have a very limited happiness from that. It's limited what you will get from that, isn't it? And finally, if you got everything and you want to enjoy it, old age and disease comes. And then it won't allow you. And in the memory of all your plans for enjoyment, you leave the body and go, isn't it? That means at that time when the old age and death, old age and disease comes, you can see that death is standing right in front of you, ready to take away everything from you, what you have struggled and acquired all life. So, one who does not know this truth, one who does not know this truth, we will say all these things, but one who doesn't have realization of these things, his situation is like that. His situation is like that. Even sometimes rich people will say all these things, but then they are unable to do anything about it. A famous sannyasi was in America, and one person called Ingersoll, Mr. Ingersoll, asked him, he used to like this sannyasi, he said, but that Ingersoll was an atheistic person, and he believed in logic and reasoning and everything. He asked this sannyasi, what kind of person are you? They were friends, he said to him, that you have given up everything, all kinds of happiness in life, and in the name of God, you have given away all the happiness or the fun of this life. You don't have anything to enjoy. What kind of life is this? He said. We say, sometimes people say like that, isn't it? You're not having any happiness in life. What are you living for? Just to eat some prasadam and to chant Hare Krishna, for which you are living in this world. There's so much to enjoy here, and you haven't got anything like that, he said. So, whereas we, if I get an orange, he said, I'll squeeze it out, the maximum from that, the juice of the orange, and I'll drink that, he said. That's our approach. Your approach is you don't have anything, you don't want to enjoy anything. Why is it like that? So, this sannyasi smiled and told him, his answer was very interesting. He said, yes, yes, I know, he said. I know how nice you are enjoying your orange, he said. It is like this, he said. Your way of enjoying is like this. A house, there's a back door in the house. And you have cooked some nice prasadam and kept it in the kitchen. Through the back door, a dog or a cat has entered the house. To the kitchen it went in and it is eating the food. And if you look at the cat or the dog, you will see every time while eating, he will keep looking, is anybody coming to beat me up? Because the dog knows also that he'll be beaten. he puts her mouth in the pots, isn't it? So similarly, you won't be able to eat anything here properly. Your so-called enjoyment is like that, he said. Because you are trying to enjoy, but at the same time inside the fear, well, it's all going to come to an end, it's all going to come to an end very soon, isn't it? Because in which moment, who is going to beat you, you don't know. Which means a disease can come, death can come, anything can happen in life, and whole thing can go finished in one lot and gone from here. So with that fear in the background, you are trying to enjoy this life, are you not? He said to Mr. Ingersoll. He says to him like that. So it is similarly, our life is like that in this world. In which moment, who is going to come and hit us from which side, we don't know. That fear is always there, isn't it? So with this fear of death, living in this world is like that. Material existence, nature is like that. With this fear, you're living in this world all the time, throughout life, is it not? All the time we are living like this. When is it going to come? When is it going to happen? What disease is the next going to hit us? What is the next problem going to happen? This way. So, so here, that whole fear of this life continuously exists. The fear of this material life is always chasing us, isn't it? So that is why if you look, I mentioned this verse before also, Bhartrihari's famous Vairagya Shatakam. There he mentions this. Bhoge Rogabhayam Kule Chudivayam Vitta Nirbaladbhayam Mane Dhanyabhayam Bale Ribhubhayam Rube Jarayabhayam Shastre Vadi Bhayam, Gune Khalabhayam, Kaye Kritandad Bhayam, Sarvam Vastu Bhayanvidam, Bhuvi Nirnam, Vairagyam Eva Bhayam. It's an important word, the way very nicely he puts it, he says there that Bhoge Rogabhayam, when you start to enjoy something, there is always the fear, am I going to get sick? When I'm drinking sweet rice happily, somebody gave me two or three letters, say, have it, enjoy it, he said. Always the fear of diabetes on eating at the back. Isn't it? Yeah. Yeah. All diseases, like everything, you can't eat also, because the fear is there, that is diabetes waiting at the doorstep. People tell you, if you take a lot of sugar, you can get diabetes. And then when you see people with problems with diabetes and suffering, then you also start thinking, I don't want it. So when you say, teachers, oh no, don't give me too much, a small cup is enough. You say like that. Out of fear, you do that. Bhoge rogabhayam. I want to have the bhogam, but rogabhayam. Fear of disease coming. Especially when you get older, you get more conscious, isn't it? And finally, when you hear all the different foods, what you can't eat, there is nothing to eat at the end. Everything has got its own side effects or reactions, whatever it is. Finally, you settle down with a little rice and a dal and be satisfied with the life. Otherwise, you know, you are in trouble. You are in serious trouble, isn't it? Blood pressure or whatever, all other things, so many listed things, isn't it, there. So, bhoge rogabhayam, we know these things, so we become more conscious. When some people say, life is meant for enjoyment, let me get sick, I don't mind. I will eat as much as I like. Whatever happens, let it happen. On one side, they'll be eating everything what they want, and then they'll be taking a lot of tablets also, to contract everything. But bhoge rogabhayam, you can't enjoy it, because of this fear of rogam, fear of disease that's waiting at the doorstep. And Bhartrihari lists in this verse all the kinds of different kinds of fear what we have. Kule chuti bhayam. For example, some people, not everyone, some people who are born in very higher families, aristocratic families, they have a fear of, will they spoil my name by doing something wrong and I will be... But nowadays there is not much of a like that also there. It's no one cares now that they don't have that. That thing has gone away from the society mostly, isn't it? So everyone doing very low class things. That is the biggest problem, that even the upper classes people are also doing low class things. then there is no society left. There is no example anymore to others to look at. So, kule chudivayam. They are feeling that, am I bringing a bad reputation for the family? What do others think about me? Or that is the fear of kulam. Kule chudivayam. Vital, then vital, vital rubalat bhayam. He's got a lot of wealth, but always the fear, what's going to happen? Pound is going to drop, or the all sorts of things can happen in the economic situation. Anything can happen. And all your so-called assets, everything, suddenly become penniless, worthless. And that fear always. And you're always on the watch about your assets. So what is going to happen? House prices or investment in shares, stocks, and all different kind of the gold prices and all things like that. So that is Vittam Nurbalat Bhayam. Mane Dhainya Bhayam. Mane Dhainya Bhayam. In other words, fear of the higher authorities, whether they are going to give you trouble for like the king and others. They can take control of your life and somebody will suddenly step inside and he's after your blood. If it so happens, and it can happen many times in the, you can see that particularly not only the king, these days newspapers also, they can get you, and if they really want to get you, they can get you in some form. Everything, there is one panorama story behind it. So that's the way the world is today, isn't it? So, Baleri Bubhayam, if you are physically strong, you have always the fear somebody else who is stronger than you. Which you can see in the sports and athletic field and everything, you will see that they are always fearful of someone else who is stronger than you, who is better than you in the sports field or athletic field or physical activities. Baleri Bubhayam, Rube Jaraya Bhayam. That means you feel looking good now, body, everything, but already it started growing old, all the body is showing its true colors. In other words, it's becoming weak, body is becoming weak, and also your memory is also going away, and you're feeling helpless about it, and you want to withdraw from the world more and more. Rupe Jaraya Bhayam, because Jara, old age, has taken over the body. And that fear inside, Jara is taking over. Old age, it is particularly, this is relevant because you can see one after the other, your faculties are failing. And you yourself start acknowledging that, I can't remember things. Or you can't remember what you have spoken to others. Things must happen in life in that way. And it's not deliberately done because body is shutting down in one way or the other. Rube Janaya Bhayam, Jana happens. Shastra Vadi Bhayam. If you have studied Shastram very well, if you meet someone else who has studied very much more than you, then you have the fear of that person. If he will argue against your understanding, so that fear of the other person. Shastra Vadi Bhayam. And Gune Khala Bhayam. Gune Khala Bhayam. That means others who are questioning you in any way. For example, they can question your own qualities and your activities. People can question. And they are keeping a watch on your life in this world. And you are under continuous scrutiny by others. So, Gune Khala Bhayam, Kaye Kridantad Bhayam. So, Sarvam Vastu Bhayanvitam. If you look at it this way in life, everything else is fear. Fear, fear, fear all the time about something or the other. Although we don't want it is there. That fear is there. Nranam vairagyam eva abhayam. Patrihari says, all this is true and the only shelter is that renunciation. Renunciation alone is the shelter for the fearless. Vairagyam eva abhayam. Says like that. So here, so it is like that. You may have a lot of money, you may have a big social circle. If you phone up, there are people to help you or get you out of the trouble. But still, you can't enjoy everything. There is always this fear: will I get sick when you want to enjoy something? Prabhupada used to mention this example. the aristocratic society in Kolkata, they big business people and all. At one time, Kolkata was very business-wise, very flourishing city, just like Mumbai is now. And then there's Kolkata was like that. So Prabhupada says that big business people, they will often have get-together and parties, and they will bring special chefs to cook for so many very, very wealthy people as guests. And they will work many, many hours to cook all that, so many different preparations. And they will all be laid out nicely on a table for a buffet arrangement, so that they could pick and choose what they want to eat. But Prabhupada says they will come there and they will all wander around the table looking at each dish and says everything is very, very nice, only thing they can't eat. And who eats them? The ones who are cooked, and somebody else eats them, everything. Prabhupada says this. He says it ends up in others eating. They all come, sometimes they may pick up one spoon and take one teaspoon from this or that, just to taste. They can't eat. They are sick. Most of them are on different kinds of tablets and medicines. So that is that, bhoge rogavayam. It is like that. That is the nature of this world. You can't blame anyone for that. That's how Maya doesn't allow you to enjoy anything unlimitedly. She will put the brake. She will put the brake. Somewhere she will put the brake, and you know very well she will put the brake. So you become more careful about it, isn't it? So this is the situation Krishna is saying here. Even you can see, even the wealthiest country with all its military might, they have fear, don't they? They are frightened, when will Al-Qaeda will come, or Taliban or whatever. When is it going to happen? That fear manifests in some form, even among them. With all their might, they still have that fear inside, isn't it? Similarly, even how beautiful you are, still after 40 years, you don't want to look in the mirror again. Because it's changing, body is going, it's on its way out, isn't it? So you can see that all the hair has grown white and the teeth have started falling off, and visits to the dentist have become more important appointments, everything. So this thing is what Bhartahari is talking about. So whatever it is, there's one thing who is very closely following us all the time, death. He's there right in front of behind us, ready to take care, control of us. Sometimes you look at the paper, you look at the obituary, you will see. Everybody is not dying at 80 and 90. Lot dying at 60 and 40 also. And if you look, the age variation, it can vary quite a bit. People who can die at any age in life. So to say that I will live up to 80 or 90 or 100 even, that's not a question. It can happen any time, any moment. So that is why he says here that the one thing, as long as you have a body, is definite, is that with this body, death is behind you, all the time with you, all the time. Ramchandra says this to Bharata. What does he say to him? He says, Bharata, when you were born, along with him, he also took birth, death, isn't it? When you are walking, he is walking with you. When you sit down somewhere, he sits next to you. And if you turn around and walk back, he will follow you back. He's like a shadow with you all the time. He is with you, he says to him. If you look in the Ramayanam, you will see how he puts it in the Ayodhya Gandam. Valmiki says, Sahaiva mrityur vrajati, saha mrityur nishidati, gatva sudhirga madhunam, saha mrityu nivartate. There is no time when mrityu is separated from you. He is always saha, with you. Always he is with you. So, like a shadow, and he is always following you, and always, because he is there, that he is with you, that is why that fear inside us, the death is, when is it going to happen? Isn't it? When will we get rid of this death? And Ramchandra himself says that, and Murtrahari also says, Vairagyam eva abhayam. The same answer. Vairagyam eva abhayam. In other words, when our attachment goes away with objects which are temporary, knowing well that all temporary objects will cheat us one day and leave us. That's what they do. Including this body, which is a temporary thing. It'll come and it will cheat and it will go. So if we lose our attachment to the body or to any other object in this world, only then, Krishna is not saying that you have to give it up. But Vairagya means not giving up the things. That is not Vairagya. Vairagya means Ragam has gone. Ragam to it has gone. In other words, if you are not particular that the body should not leave you, or other things, your wealth or name or fame, should not leave you. If you are not particular about that, then that fear will go. It is because we are particular about it, isn't it? Body should not go. We are very particular about that. That is why we are feeling so enthusiastic to do something or the other to protect the body. But we know we can't protect it because ultimately it will go. That is the way it is. So this fear will go when you lose that, you're not particular anymore about everything, about including the body. Because including this body, everything here will one day will leave us and go. If this is realized, Ragam will go. And with the Ragam, Bhayam, fear also will go. How will the Ragam go? Will that go straight away? Because sometimes you have Vairagyam due to hate. Suppose you have hate for something, you develop Vairagyam inside, isn't it? That Vairagyam will not last for very long. Just like when we have a temporary Vairagyam when somebody dies, we think that, he's dead. And then you feel a little bit Vairagyam towards life in this world for some time, short period of time. But that won't last very long. Suppose you have worked very hard, but nothing was successful in life. Everything went wrong. And a lot of distress came. And you miserably failed in your goals. People have all sorts of goals in life, isn't it? Acquire a lot of wealth, big success in a business or acquiring big name and fame, followers, all sorts of things. And if you have failed in all these things, at that time, if Vairagyam comes, if you have failed in everything, and then Vairagyam has come to him, and then you have succeeded in something, what will happen? That Vairagyam will go. This is the way Maya works in this world. Initially, she will give you some Vairagyam. That means when you fail in things, in your projects or in your plans, everything failed, and she will give you some Vairagyam at that time. And once you start thinking, oh, I have become very renounced, you feel like that. You can tolerate a lot of things in this world. But then some success comes in life, the whole other things is forgotten. Maya's way of doing things, isn't it? So through distress, if Vairagyam comes, if some happiness comes, that Vairagyam will go. If it has come through distress. What will Maya do is, as I mentioned many times before, Maya, what she does is, she will smack you on both the cheeks a lot. And then you will get some Vairagyam. At that time she push one Cadbury's into your mouth. Enjoy this, she'll say. This is the way Maya works here. You can see that. And it is not so easy to get that proper Vairagyam. It is not easy. When will Vairagyam come then? That is the question, isn't it? When will proper Vairagyam come? Krishna answers that in the Bhagavad Gita. Is it not? You know, in the second chapter. Krishna says there that when we have attachment for self, knowledge of the self, Krishna, bhakti, jnanam, for Krishna, when it develops inside, vairagyam will come. That's the only way, proper vairagyam will come. Even what you get through distress, then vairagyam has got this problem, that it can leave you tomorrow. When some happiness comes, that little vairagyam you had, you can see that in even devotee's life also. When they were very young, some distress happened in life. They took to Krishna consciousness. And after a few years, they lived very austere life, practiced everything very rigorously. And then some things happened in life, and they got married, and they started doing some business or got into some profession. And then things so happened, they made a lot of money. Some of the devotees made a lot of money. When the lot of money came, what happened was that vairagyam they had when they had a brahmachari, when they started, and all that austerity all disappeared one after the other. They couldn't anymore do it. That why? Because that vairagyam has come from distress. Vairagyam that has come from distress will go when happiness comes through wealth. When happiness comes through wealth. Because as soon as wealth comes and life becomes a little bit comfortable, then that all that austere life what you could live or you had before, you are not able to do it anymore. Because by body immediately start accepting all the comforts of this world, and then you start thinking, well, then you will make it excuse, saying that Krishna has given me everything, what can I do? I have to utilize it in Krishna's service or something like that. You may find some excuse to change your lifestyle, isn't it? It happens. You will see this all the time in people's life. So Krishna's point is here is that the only when you get attached to Krishna and spiritual life and self-realization, proper vairagyam can come. Otherwise it won't happen. Who mentions this? If you look into Bhagavatam, you will see. Gopi says this. Gopis are saying this. Gopi says here, itara raga vismaranam nranam. If you look into Gopiya Gitam, Gopis are saying this. Itara raga vismaranam nranam adhara vira naste adharamradam. If you look in the 10th canto, 31st chapter, there is a verse, Gopis vouching this to Krishna. They are saying, because Krishna tried to send them back to the home, to their children and the parents, isn't it? So Gopi says to Krishna that our vairagyam is not coming from distress. Gopi is answering Krishna like that. Itara raga vismar, 14th verse. Surada vardhanam shoka nashanam surida venuna sushtu chumpidam. Itara raga vismaranam nranam adhara vidara viranaste adharamradam. Gopi saying to Krishna that itara ragam, attachment, surada vardhanam shoka nashanam surida venuna sushtu chumpidam. Itara raga vismaranam nranam. All attachment elsewhere has gone. Why? Because you got attached to Krishna. This is what has happened. So, actually you can only... This is the reason why we are not stable in spiritual life. Sometimes we are feeling top of the world. Sometimes next day you are feeling or you can't proceed anymore in spiritual life. Isn't it? This cyclical change is because of this. Because attachment to Krishna hasn't developed. And somehow or the other, through distress in life or through experiences in life, some vairagyam has come. But then again, the modes of nature is working in us, isn't it? So when the modes of nature is changing, that change of the modes of nature is affecting us also. Rajogunam, tamogunam. Then you start thinking, oh, maybe let me go back again and do what I was doing before. All this spiritual life is not going to work for me. Some conclusion you come up with. Suddenly the mind from inside throw this idea into you. And you get completely shaken by everything. But you are so, the powerful waves that comes from inside. Why? Because proper vairagyam hasn't come inside. Everyone is in the same situation. Nobody is different. Till we have proper Krishna consciousness inside, what gopis are saying there, Surada Vardhanam, Shokanashanam, Surada Venuna, Sushtu Chumbidam, Itara Raga Vismaranam Nurnam, Vidara Virarasthe Adharamradam. Gopis are so focused in one thing that Krishna and Krishna alone is them for them, matters now in life. Not the children. Their own children they are willing to give up. Their attachment to the children. Imagine that. And to their husbands, and to the parents, and the family members, all written off. They are saying, Itararaga Vismaranam Nranam, you won't be able to fool us anymore like that, they say to Krishna. So Krishna understood that gopi state of consciousness, that they have developed a taste for Krishna. That is the secret behind it. They have understood who Krishna is. Once you have experienced Krishna, like the way gopis have experienced that, then it is difficult for them to get attached to children, attached to family, attached to home, attached to all other comforts of this world. That is the proof of that. That is the only way we will remain steady in spiritual life. Only if proper attachment to Krishna develops, only in that case we will not fall from spiritual life. Otherwise, you can see even sannyasis and all, after many years of service and many years of sadhana, and staying away from family life and doing everything what they can in their capacity, and they fall, isn't it? You see this every time happening. Why? Because this thing hasn't happened. That attachment to Krishna is the only way you will come out of this situation. Otherwise, it can happen to anybody. It can happen to anybody, anytime, in the spiritual life also. So what happened is, when they got attached to Krishna, all other things have become sour. It has become very sour. They can't enjoy it anymore. That stage. That's what Krishna is talking about. So that vastu, what is Krishna? Krishna is that permanent thing, isn't it? Nitya vastu is Krishna. Gopis addressed to Krishna. Nitya praye pati sudanyoyam artyadai kim. Gopis says that, isn't it? So nitya vastu only will get us out of this. Anitya vastu. Anitya vastu means temporary thing. If we hold on, they are temporary, so we will also be temporary. We will also become temporary. That is why we are not able to stay in spiritual life, because we are holding on to still anitya vastu, temporary vastu. When nitya vastu, which is Krishna, when we take Krishna's shelter and we get attached to Krishna, then because that vastu, nitya vastu means that vastu, that thing which will not leave us any time. That is Krishna, isn't it? So, where will you find that vastu, that permanent vastu? So, after knowing which, after realizing what, then there is nothing else to be known. Where will you inquire after that vastu? Where will you find him? How will you find him? And the answer to that is all Upanishads. That's what the rishis are saying to us. So you can see, first rishis found out what the solution is, then the process. First the solution. Solution to the problem is attachment to Krishna. There is no other way. In their language, they will say attachment to Brahman or attachment to the truth, Satyam, Satyam Varam Dhimahi, whatever way they call it, or in devotees' language, attachment to Krishna. So except that is the only way we can come out of this problem. There is no other way. This is their first discovery. They found out this. Then they found out the process. Upanishads. Upanishads are the process. So Vedantam. Vedantam means the perfection of that. That is Vedantam. Vedantam means perfecting this science of how to get completely, fully attached to the permanent thing, truth. Vedam talks about that, isn't it? So So, all other knowledge, what we have got in this world, is to know about other things in this world, is it not? If you look in this world, the other knowledge is all about different objects. If you go into higher level, it is up to the planets and other information about the universe and things like that. They are collecting all the time. But everything, something outside, isn't it? But Vedantam, the difference is not knowing something about other things. You may even knowing about your own body. That is also not in the Vedanta. About your own body, your own mind, your own intelligence, your own ego, and all about the world. All this is not discussed in the Vedanta. Vedanta is only talking about one thing, that not knowing about something outside you, but knowing about that thing by whose presence you come to know about all other things, which is called in Shastra as Nyakti. Remember that word? Nyakti. Who uses that word? Mujhunda. Mujhunda says. So, Nyakti is what Vedanta is talking about. Vedanta is saying to us, not by knowing about other things, but knowing about that thing by whose presence you are able to know other things. That is what called Nyakti. Because awareness inside is Nyakti. Because of that, Nyakti or Pratyagalma or awareness or Andaryami, because of that, we are experiencing everything, knowing everything else, isn't it? All rest of the world, our own body, mind, intelligence, and all these broken knowledges of various topics in this world, astronomy, science and history, and so many things. Whatever we know is known like this, in this way. Because he is present there, that's why we are able to know other things. If he is not there, you won't know anything else, would you? So that is the point Krishna is making here. That by whose presence we have become conscious. We became aware of other things, existence of other things, and we are able to collect information about this. Science is all collecting information, isn't it? Modern science means nothing but collecting information about moon, about sun, about planets and other things. There is nothing spectacular about it. If somebody is, and that you can see, which is because under Maya's control, she can keep changing that also. It can never remain permanent. Like, we give a lot of credit to that when we go underground, this underneath the sea, and collect information from about the sea, life underneath the sea, or life in the space, and spacecraft in the Mars, and other things. But they all have no meaning in real sense. It's all you're collecting more and more information about it. That's all. You haven't got any knowledge really, because what you've got is something happening in this time and space, somewhere. In time and space, that's what it is. But, here, what is happening? What is Nyakti? What is Nyakti? That is what you have to question. By whose presence you are seeing things through the eye? By whose presence you are hearing through the ears? By whose presence you are smelling through the nose and touching through the skin and tasting through the tongue? And by who inside us, remaining there in the name of Jiva, who is staying inside, and who is continuously reminding us of his presence there through this beating, heartbeat, reminding us that, and when that is realized, who is that, who is doing all these things? And Vedantam calls that as realization or knowledge. That in Vedantic words, that is knowledge. If you know about that vastu inside, who is sitting there in the name of Jiva there? Who is tasting and experiencing the world through five senses? And feeling, willing, thinking, feeling and willing. First feeling, and then thinking, and then willing. That is the sequence in which it happens. First feeling, then thinking and willing. So all these things are happening by whose presence? That is what we have to ask. All this experience of the world through the five senses, who is behind it? Who is experiencing it? So you can see Vedantam has not given much importance to the world. It has given importance to the person who is behind it. Who is behind it? So that awareness, that if you know, then Vedantam calls that as knowledge. That is the word knowledge, what Vedantam defines as knowledge. Not the knowledge of the external objects. External objects' knowledge is not even taken into account, because it's of no use in realizing the truth. That Nyakti inside, by whose presence we are experiencing the world through eyes, nose, ears, tongue, tasting, everything, and by whose presence you have that thinking, feeling, willing, everything that's happening inside, different experiences or emotions inside, it's all happening because of his presence inside. That is, when we address as Jiva, isn't it? So knowing about him is Vedantam calls it as knowledge. That is the knowledge Krishna is talking about in the Bhagavad Gita also. Knowledge means that, nothing else. That's the only knowledge. In the Srimad Bhagavatam you can see Mujgunda mentions this, isn't it? He says to Krishna, I am fed up of knowledge, he says. Mujgunda says. Because after a while everyone comes to this same situation. You had enough of this knowledge business, isn't it? If you look into the 51st chapter, you will see there, he mentions, Tasmad 57. 51, 10, 51, 57. Tasmad visrajya shusham isha sarvato rajastamas sattva gunanubandhanam. Because those knowledge what scientists and others are collecting are under the three modes of material nature, isn't it? Rajasa, sattvam, tamasa, gunanubandhanam. They bind you. And so the knowledge that they bring is either in passion or in ignorance or in goodness. They collect this knowledge. Whatever the science has brought up and anything else in this world, it is like that. But I had enough of that, he says, which I have received in that way. Therefore, niranjanam, nirgunam, advayam param tvam nyepti matram purusham brajamyaham. Final two lines he is saying, I had enough of that, therefore niranjanam nirgunam advayam param tvam nyepti matram purusham brajamyaham. He is saying to Krishna that your nature is niranjanam, that you are never, that I cannot ask anything more than this, he says to him, that this is the only thing I am looking forward to. Niranjanam nirgunam advayam param. For he, not touched by the three modes of nature. Knowledge one without a second. That means knowing which there is no more to be known. Anything to be known. That is nirgunam advayam. The same thing what Bhagavatam says in the beginning. Vadandita tattvidam tattvam yat jnanam advayam. That same advayam here. Niranjanam nirgunam advayam. Advayam means one without a second. That means knowing that there is no other knowledge after that. That's all. With that it ends. The inquiry finishes there. So that is what Mujgunda is saying here. I have given up all other desires in me and I cannot ask you anything anymore. I can't ask you anything because all other thing I have enough of it. I had enough of that. You see, why Mujgunda was brought in? Because Mujgunda's position, a very powerful king, if he is saying this, we can accept that, isn't it? Because kings means Kshatriyas, they have such a facility for sense enjoyment and happiness in life. There is no dearth of material happiness, isn't it, in them. So when they say, they mean that. If we say, they may not take it seriously, but when a king says that they have reached that highest happiness of the happiness of material life, isn't it? Material life. So that is why he mentions there that he says, Tasma Tasan Visrajya Shushamisha Sarvato Rajastama Sattva Guna Anubandhanam Niranjanam Nirgunam Advayam Param Tvam Yapti Matram Purusham Vrajamyaham. That is the way Mujgunda has spoken. Mujgunda has spoken. These prayers are important in the Bhagavatam because it will, if you properly study this and scrutinize it, you can see the heart of that devotee, Mujgunda, isn't it? How he's saying, Mujgunda was a very powerful personality, isn't it? Mujgunda's ancestry, if you read in the Bhagavatam, you can see in the Solar dynasty, he was such a powerful king, Mujgunda. And he's saying this, I don't want this anymore, this collecting information business from this world, because they are all under the three modes of nature that's coming. But Niranjanam Nirgunam Advayam Param Tvam Yapti Matram Purusham Vrajamyaham. That is what I am looking for. And that's you, says to Krishna. That Niranjanam, Nirgunam, Advayam, that knowledge, Tvam, you are that, Nyapti. And that is Nyapti inside me. Nyapti Matam Purusham, and that person Vrajamyaham, I take that shelter. So you can see this is knowledge. This is knowledge. That finally to recognize that all other knowledge is all useless. That recognition, acknowledging that's what he is doing there. So I want Niranjanam. Niranjanam means which is not touched by any kind of, by any black spot. It's so pure, Niranjanam. That knowledge, which is not touched by, because Brahma Vidya, Sarva Vidya, Pratishtam. Brahma Vidya, all other Vidya is dependent on Brahma Vidya, isn't it? If you have no Brahma Vidya, other Vidya cannot flourish. Only because of the presence of Brahman inside, you are collecting all this knowledge from the world. Science, technology, engineering, medicine, everything, whatever you take. All is dependent on this Brahma Vidya. If Brahma Vidya is not there, that is why Brahma Vidya, Sarva Vidya, Pratishtha. All other Vidya is dependent on this Brahma Vidya. So that is what he is saying here, that because of that, Brahma Vidya is not tainted by any black spot. All other Vidya is imperfect. The only Vidya that is perfect in this world is Brahma Vidya. If you really understand that statement. Any other Vidya what you have developed in this world is imperfect. It can change. It can, various things people are changing. Isn't it? You can see Darwin's theory, we are questioning now. Isn't it? Now? Many scientific discoveries we are questioning now. Einstein's theory people are questioning. That there are some other scientists are coming up with modified version of that and things like that. So why is it like that? No perfect Vidya you can't develop in this world. And the only perfect Vidya in this world is Brahma Vidya. That is why they say Brahma Vidya, Sarva Vidya, Pratishtha. All other Vidya is dependent on this Brahma Vidya. Brahma Vidya is such an important thing. That is why Acharyas never deviated from that. They stuck to that. And the Rishis also. So here he says Nirgunam. Nirgunam means that not useless. That's not what it means. What it means is that it is the limitation of the language that it says here. Nirgunam means that it is not touched by the modes of nature. That's what it means. Not touched by the modes of nature. And that means Sattugunam, Rajogunam and Tamogunam. It transcended. This knowledge has transcended the three modes of nature. And that happiness that's coming from that, which you never loses again, that Shanti or Anandam, that comes from transcending the three modes of material nature. Transcending the three modes of material nature. That is called Nirgunam. Nirgunam. And because if it is touched by Gunam, anything, Gunasparsham. Gunasparsham means if anything is touched by Gunam, if your knowledge is touched by Gunam, the result of that or the happiness or anything what you experience from that, you will lose it. If it is not touched by the modes of nature, it will remain. That's the principle. That is the principle. So, advayam nyapti avabhodam. So here you can see that nyapti, what this nyapti, discussing this nyapti again, you can see. We discussed this in the Kathopanishad also. How to come to this nyapti? The object is there, I is seeing that. I is the drik, object is the drishyam. I becomes the drishyam, mind becomes the drik. Isn't it? Mind becomes the drik. And mind becomes a drishyam, intelligence becomes a drik. Intelligence becomes a drishyam and the self becomes a drik. Self becomes the drik. So like here, externally I am seeing a few people now here, isn't it? So you are the drik, you are the drishyam, I am the drik. And with the eyes I am seeing. But if I just have the eyes alone, will I see? No, I won't, isn't it? So if you, instead of me, suppose you put a dead body here, that dead body won't see you all, dead body won't see you all, isn't it? So in other words, behind the eyes, I need the mind to see it, isn't it?
But if I have the mind alone, will I see? No. So, who sees the mind while sleeping in the night? I am dreaming, isn't it? I am dreaming. So, for example, in the dream, I am seeing a big festival somewhere, big festival. Lot of people moving around, people are playing drums and people are singing and lot of people are having a feast. So many things going on in a festival. So, where did this happen in the dream state? How did that happen? Because where did they all come from, all those people in the festival? How did they come into the festival? So, so at that time, what has happened is, the object what I am seeing, the drukha has become the drishyam also. Drukha, that means the person who is seeing, he has become the drishyam, isn't it? He has expanded himself. Drukha, that is the beauty of the dream state. He can expand, and it's an amazing thing that here now we are seeing in the vacant state something. But I can transport this whole scenario into my dream. Without any of your presence, I can see you all in the dream. That is the important thing. That's when you see this drukha and drishyam, same person. Drukha and drishyam becomes the same person, isn't it? So here, what has happened is, this thing of the mind expanding in the dream state is called vijrambhanam. Vijrambhanam. Vijrambhanam, that's a Sanskrit word. The vijrambhanam means the capacity of the mind to expand itself in the dream state. In the dream state. So, when you look at that, you can see mind can be a drik and at the same time it can be a drishyam also. Can be a drishyam also. So, one who is seeing the mind generally refers to, when they say mind in the Shastram, intelligence is also included in that. In the Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna mentions in a little different way, Indriyani Pararahu Indriyebhi Paramana Manasastu Parabuddhi, he says like that. Sometimes buddhi can see the mind. The buddhi can see how the mind is bringing forth the different problems, and buddhi is trying to sort the problems out. Isn't it? Normally that's our experience. Lot of ideas are thrown at us, and we are trying to look at each option. And intelligence does that business. So that is why Indriya Parabhyana Manasastu Parabuddhi Yo Buddhe Paradastusa. And but that buddhi is also operating. Buddhi becomes a drishyam because of Atma inside as the drukha. Atma is inside as the drukha. So here you can say here that finally it is the Atma that matters. Atma that matters. It is His presence only. All these different things are happening or operating in this world. So, I am, which I call as the false ego, which we address as the false ego. That is my personality, which we address as the personality. That is present in everyone as ahankaram inside, isn't it? It is present in everyone. That is the existence of me, awareness. So, if you have found out who is this I am referring to, as Bhagavatam says, that I am, who is that? If you find that out, then you have found out Krishna. You have found out Krishna then. If you have found out who this I am is, isn't it? So, that is why, when the Srimad Bhagavatam day began, you will notice in the Bhagavatam, they quoted one Upanishad mantra in the first canto, in the second chapter. Directly from the Upanishad, Sudha Goswami took it and put it there. Vidyade Hridaya Grandhi. That verse. Vidyade Hridaya Grandhi. Chidyande Sarva Samshaya. Kshiyande Chasya Karmani. Drushto Evatmani Ishwari. It is Upanishad verse brought straight into Bhagavad Gita. To Srimad Bhagavatam. While speaking about the glories of bhakti, he mentions many things there before that. That he says that the you can see that's the important chapter, the second chapter in the first canto, where it talks about the necessity of Krishna consciousness and also hearing process,
everything spoken there. Shunnadam Sagada Krishna, Punya Sharana Gyatanam, Hridyandastohi, Abhadrani, Vidhunodi, Sukul Sadam, Nashta Prayeshu, Abhadreshu, Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya, the necessity to study Bhagavadam, reading Bhagavadam, Bhagavadi, Uttama Shloki, Bhaktir Bhagavadi Nashtagi, Yadaraja, Samulavam, Kama Lobada Esche, Chedamitra Navidam, Siddham Sate Prasidhi, first thing to important thing to cultivate Satogunam. Evam Prasanna Manaso, Bhagavad Bhakti Yoga, that will develop Bhagavad Bhakti inside. Bhagavad Tattva Vijnanam, you will get to understand what is Krishna, Tattva Jnanam, Mukta Sangasa Jayade. And then he says, what will happen? Vidyade Hridaya Granthi. That verse. That is from the Upanishads directly taken there. Vidyade Hridaya Granthi, Chidyande Sarva Samshaya, Kshiyande Chasya Karmani, Drishtu Evalpan Ishwari. He says, Tasmin Drashte Paravare, that is the way Upanishad verse is. It's slightly the last words changed into Drishtu Evalpan Ishwari. Because it is in the Bhagavadam, it is Ishwara. In the Upanishad, it is Tasmin Drashtu Paravare. Paravare. So, if you have seen Krishna in the Atma, if you have seen Krishna in the Atma, then this ahankaram inside will break down. Till you see Krishna as Atma, this ahankaram will remain separately. The moment you see Krishna as Atma inside, ahankaram will break down. Naturally, it will. That tie hard knot of ahankaram. Ahankaram is like a knot. that knot will loosen and break it down at that time. So, and with that, what else will happen? Chidyande sarva samshaya. Up to that time, these doubts will keep coming. Doubts will keep coming. Doubts are a very big problem, isn't it? When will it come? You cannot say. Everything will be going very normal, suddenly one doubt will come. And then you will start thinking, am I doing something wrong now? Am I doing the right thing? What is wrong? I am doing something not right in my spiritual life. That's why everything is going wrong. These thoughts will start coming and disturbing inside. That is the nature of the doubt. That power of the mind to show to us. Chidyande sarva samshayaha. So, point is, Bhagavatam is saying that Hridaya Granthi, this Hridaya Granthi is this ajnanam, avidya or jiva, what it is called, ahankaram, the various names, vastu is one. When that break down, when will it break down? When you see the Atma inside as Krishna, who is inside me as Atma. When I realize that this Hridaya Granthi will break, jiva will break, ahankaram will break, everything breaks down, completely goes away. Kriyande, Chidyande Sarva Samshaya. Only at that point the doubts will stop. Till that point the doubts will keep coming one after the other. Even great, great people, they have acknowledged that. Even personalities, very highly realized soul, they even say that they get doubts. Doubts can come. Because he is inside there to create that doubt mind. Isn't it? He will continuously throw new doubts at you. And you will, so if they are saying that, what you can imagine our situation, every moment something new is coming. And their process is, knowing Krishna is the answer. Realizing Krishna's presence inside, Antaryami, Atma inside, is the way to come out of this doubting business. Not answering question. Answering question won't solve the problem. How long can you answer the question? Sometimes you will see on the different websites, there's so many websites and they are answering your questions. You have to send your question and they'll give you an answer for that. Answering won't solve the problem. Okay, temporarily that answer. Then you will say, oh, does it make sense? That's the next thing the mind will say. The answer. Does it make the sense? It may make the sense. It may not make the sense. Even if it has made the sense, next moment another question will come. Sometimes one answer will create another 100 doubts inside. This we have to know about the nature of the mind. That is the more important thing, rather than finding out the answer. Acknowledging the nature of the mind. And knowing very well the mind is playing its game. And knowing how to stay out of the mind. We have to have a long introduction to this chapter, to talking about Krishna before. Because Purushottama Yogam, this chapter, Krishna is going to throw at us on our face all about our material understanding of our material existence. And that's why this chapter is a very subtle chapter.
At the same time, it's one of the most important chapter in the Bhagavad Gita. Of course, every chapter is important, but you can't say that. But still, this chapter, there's only a small chapter, 20 verses. But in these 20 verses, Krishna is going to present himself to us. Who am I? About Krishna himself, he's going to tell us about it. And that's a little different than the way we try to explain Krishna. We will explain Krishna, oh, beautiful, good-looking, Krishna is very beautiful, flute in the hand, and playing the flute, and the yellow pidambaram or garment Krishna is wearing, and Krishna's nice prasadam Krishna is taking, is dancing with the gopis. This is our way of presenting Krishna, isn't it? But if you look at Krishna's way of presenting Krishna, it is much different. It's totally different. And if this realization comes, then the problem is all solved. Problem is all solved. This is the only way it can come up. That is why this chapter is important. If this realization comes, the way Krishna has spoken about himself in this chapter, if this realization comes, then no doubts will come after that. Because this chapter is so much deep level spoken in such a depth. And that is why, although it is 20 verses, each and every verse of this chapter is pretty heavy. Upanishads taken and Krishna has squeezed out the juice and put it in the verse. That's what he has done. Different Upanishads from different places, he has pulled it out. That's why it's a bit difficult chapter, but we'll see. So to begin with, to come to that understanding, Vidyade Hrudaya Grandhi. First of all, Hrudaya Grandhi has to go. Ahankaram has to go. Jivatvam has to go from inside. Then what will happen is, the next thing is Chidyande Sarva Samshaya. All the doubts will go. Then what happens is Chiyande Chasya Karmani. Karmam is finished. Karmam won't go otherwise. Karmam will chase you all the time. One moment you will decide not to engage in karmam. The next moment the mind will create karmam and tell you that why are you sitting quiet? Why don't you do something about it? And then you are helpless. You got up straight away, ready for action. So this is how the mind is. Isn't it? It's very difficult to do that. To get that understanding of karma, when to do karma, when not to do karma, that is an art in itself. Only with knowledge it will come. Only with knowledge and realization that understanding will come. What karma should I do? What I should not do in this world? It is a very difficult subject because in the Bhagavad Gita Krishna is saying, Gahana karmano gati. Karma, the way karma pulls people into it. And sometimes you get pulled into it and you are helplessly has to follow it. You have no choice either. So here you can see Shanti comes to that Jiva, becomes Shanti state. So the knowing this is the goal of Upanishads, Bhagavad Gita, everything. And what is the truth? To know our Swarupam. Our Swarupam, our identity. Who am I? That is what the question is. Who am I? Isn't it? So this is the summary of this whole chapter. Who am I? That's what this chapter is going to talk to us. Who is Krishna and who am I? That's the first answer. Am I this body? Because that we have seen, intellectually we have understood that we are not this body. Isn't it? Because deham. Deham means shariram. Shariram iti shiryade. Shiryade means one, it gets continuously getting destroyed. Constantly getting destroyed. That's the nature of this body. Shiryade iti shariram. So if I am this body, this is the first conclusion. If I am this body, then I can never have permanent happiness. Isn't it? If I am this body, I can never have permanent... There's no point in me struggling then. Trying to find permanent happiness, if I am this body. Because you know very well, without anyone's explanations, we know ourselves that the body will die one day. It's already on its way out, isn't it? So, body is dying and it's going to go, and I can never have a permanent happiness with this body. That is not possible. So, and people have scientists and medical doctors and professors and medical science, they have done a lot of research to make themselves perfect this body. They've tried very hard. You can't say they haven't. They've tried very hard, isn't it? And they also tried to make this body looking attractive throughout and functional, strong and functional throughout life. But we know very well that body doesn't listen to anybody. They won't listen to us, first of all. They won't even listen to scientists or to the doctors. They won't listen. The body's nature is like that. It won't listen to anybody. It won't listen to anybody. So, because this body never consults with us when it does something, isn't it? It doesn't consult with us at any time. Because if it was consulting us, we would have, if it has been consulting with us, we would have asked Krishna, oh, you should give me a very good-looking, beautiful, young and attractive body. We could have asked that to Krishna, isn't it? We asked that to Krishna. But, only after taking birth and after a while, when you come to the bodily identity strongly, then is this desire coming up. I must have a good, strong body. We, you know, like with a good muscles and with attractive looking, beautiful face, everything. That desire comes there. But there's nothing you can do about it. You can't change it then, can you? Sometimes people try very hard. Some people succeed to some extent. Some people don't. So they give it up at the end. So, so you can see here that whatever you may desire with this body to happen, to grow in a particular way, or to remain healthy, or to give you enough energy to do things what you want, or to enjoy the senses the way you want, all these desires you may have, but if you ask your body to allow that, body doesn't cooperate. Body won't cooperate with you. Body doesn't agree with it. Body has its own way it goes. And you have to, you can keep your desires inside and talk to the body about it, but body won't listen to that. And, but the reason is that, why do we say like that, we think like that? Because we think the body is ours. That's why we are doing that, isn't it? We don't acknowledge the fact the body belongs to Prakriti. Prakriti has given this body and it is her control she is all the time. And after it has taken birth in the womb of the mother, and then it grew, and then it keeps changing the body, and then it starts deteriorating, and finally destruction and death happens. That's six changes which happens to the body, In all these things, when the body is going through these six different kinds of changes, what's happening for the body, my desires, and my plans has very, very little impact on that. Absolutely nothing, you can say. Practically, you have nothing to contribute to that. The changes that's happening in the body, the growth, the old age, and the diseases that come through the body, and the deterioration in the body, and the different kinds of illnesses, and all the experiences what you have to go through the body, you can see you have personally no influence in that, in any of them, isn't it? So, so with your intelligence, you may have done, tried very hard to alter the situation, and you may have used the best medicines, everything. Still, illness will come. Isn't it? You've got a lot of money, and you have spent enough money and purchased the best, most expensive medicines in this world, but still you get sick. Still you will get sick. But you can't find out a medicine whereby you can enjoy your senses unlimitedly without getting sick. For example, diabetes, for example. I know if I take a lot of sweet, diabetes will come. I don't. There is no medicine to stop diabetes coming and I can enjoy the sweet rice unlimitedly. Is there? There's no medicine for that. There's no medicine for that. So what will happen is, on one side diabetes, other side I can take my sweet rice. Both can go side by side, and what will happen, you know, finally. Who will win? So you can't get out of the illness. So this is if you look at the body in this way, you will see your own limitations. There's nothing much you can do about it. And same thing they're trying to do now, you can see, it's, look at the stupidity of the whole thing. Diabetes is one example. AIDS, what they're trying to do. They're trying to develop some medicine whereby you can unlimitedly enjoy sex life in this world. Material nature won't agree with that. They'll say, yes, you can make any medicine and keep trying to cure, like the way you're playing with the diabetes. You can play with it. But on the other side, AIDS will take control and AIDS will control the body finally and you'll lose the battle. And that's what they're busy with research. Isn't it? A big foundation working and operating for that things. So even to that extent, even to such an extent, body has no, we have no control over this body. This we have to recognize first. It is an important thing to recognize these things. Body is not in my control. Very difficult thing for most of the people to accept it, isn't it? The only thing what we know is, as soon as there is some problem, we will say, oh, I need this body for Krishna service. So I ring up all the best hospitals and the doctors and the medicines, whatever I can get hold of, thinking that Krishna service needs this body. Otherwise, how will I serve Krishna? This is the answer to that. That is not a real logic. It is not making any sense. More important than that is to know that this body is like that. And to accept that, that is proper understanding. You can do things within your capacity, you may try and do some things. But all the time, this recognition is necessary. Body will not come under your control under any circumstances. It will not come. You can see sometimes people with all the medical facilities, all the wealth in this world, they suffer with their body. Constantly, and no way to come out of it. And when you see that, you can recognize. So that recognition is more important. Somebody asked one question, that someone doing engaged in sinful life, but he chants Hare Krishna. Someone else, he is not attracted to sinful life, he lives a life in this world, but he doesn't chant Hare Krishna. Who is better? If you ask that question, it's an important question, isn't it? Somebody engages in sinful activities, but he engages in chanting Hare Krishna also. Another person, he is more sensible and he says, I cannot chant Hare Krishna. I'm busily occupied with many things, but at least I'll remain aloof from the sinful activity. With that way he lives. That person is stronger than the other person who does sinful things and chanting Hare Krishna. That is the reason behind it, because the person who controls his mind and senses, he acquires more strength spiritually than the other person who is weaker, who is unable to control the senses and the mind. So that is the important point. Here also, Krishna is pointing out this, that this conscious of this, because he understands the limitations of the body. He knows very well, the body, if I abuse it, it will bring certain reactions. Not only on a gross level, in a subtle level, if you abuse the body. Not only in the gross level you will suffer, but even in the subtle level. That means tamogunam, rajogunam will build up inside. Sinful activities, sinful reactions will follow from that. Isn't it? So here you will see there that to tell us that body is not ours, that's the most important thing. Body is not ours. That is the first thing to know. Body is not ours. You remember in the Srimad Bhagavatam, when Krishna went to steal the butter, there is a verse there that one house Krishna walked in. And there, a baby was sleeping in the cot. Baby cot. Baby was sleeping. Krishna went inside, there was no butter. Then Gopi has deliberately hid everything from Krishna. And Gopi was clever, so she kept everything hiding from Krishna. So Krishna went inside and looked at it and found out that she doesn't want to give me anything, isn't it? So what did Krishna do at that time? What Krishna did, said that, he said, went to the Goshala, Gopi's big Goshala, there had so many cows. untied all the calves and let them out loose. They went away, running into the field. And naturally, the cows also followed, and they went and started eating the crops in the other's fields, other farmers' fields. You know what that means, isn't it? All over the world, it's like that. Go and eating. It's the first result of the trouble to start. And then, after doing all that, Krishna was walking out, went up to this baby who was stealing sleeping in the cot, pinched on its bum very strongly, made it cry, that baby, to cry, and then walked out from there. So many Bhagavatam commentators are trying to understand, why this? This is quite an unusual thing for the Supreme Personality of Godhead to do this. He said, go to the Gopi's house. Okay, Gopi hasn't given the butter. Understand that. You have done with the cows and calves, even that you can understand. But an innocent baby who is only 3 months or 4 months old, sleeping in the cot, to go and that baby hasn't done anything to Krishna. He was quietly sleeping. And mother Gopi was doing the work at home, homework, whatever she had to do in the kitchen, washing, cleaning, whatever she was doing that. And deliberately, Krishna goes there and pinches the bum, that little baby's bum, and makes it painful so that the baby will cry. Made the baby to cry very loudly. And hearing that, the Gopi comes. And when the Gopi comes, Krishna runs out from there. Valsan Munjan Kochida samaye krosha sanjada hasa steyam swadvati adadadibada kalpidai steya yogaihi markan bhokshan vibhajadansadin nati bhandam bhinati dravyalabhe sagrahubito ya upakrosha togan. This verse has, actually in the Bhagavadam, has put a lot of Bhagavadam commentators are trying to get to some understanding between this. It seems to be doesn't right what Krishna has done. But the answer, many agree on this issue, is this, that that the child as a baby hasn't done anything to Krishna. Hasn't done anything to Krishna. And Krishna wanted to play. Krishna was playing with the gopis. That's fine. There's nothing problem with that. But a little baby like this, it's a very cruel way of exploiting, enjoying some fun, isn't it? Valsan Munjan Kochita Samaye. Valsan Munjan, Valsa means the calves. They were let loose. Kochita Samaye. Asamaye means Kochita Samaye. Asamaye means not the right time. Early hours in the morning. Munjan were let go, freely go. Krosha Samjadaha Saha. And then, while coming out from the house, it's not normally smile, ho, 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 like that. What a wonderful job I have done. You know when you do something marvelous, how do you express your success in a way to everybody should know that I have done a great job in that way. Krosha Sanjadaha Saha. That Krosham Sanjadaha Saha, a smile like that, deliberately to agitate the gopi. Steyam swadvati. He's saying that she is deliberately hiding everything, what is very tasty for me. Doesn't want to give it to me, she's hiding it. Steyam swadvati atha dadibada kalpidei steya yogei. That this dadi and yogurt, butter and all that things, that is deliberately hidden from me. And I have only one way to break the pot and take it from there. And Shukha Brahmarshi calls this as Steya Yoga, a new kind of yoga system. Like Jnanam Bhakti Karmam, Steya Yoga, it says. Stealing yoga system. Stealing yoga. Steya Yoga. And then what else he did after breaking the pots, all this is happening in the gopi's house. Broke the pot, took out everything, and distribution to friends. Markan, Bhokshan, all to the monkeys first. And and then distributed to the cats who were present there, the monkeys. And whoever friends cowherd boys were with him, they were also given everything. Vibhajati said all that was distributed then. Nati bhandam vinati broke down the pot, smashed it down to get her angry. You have done this to me, I'll do this to you. This is the mood at the time. Krishna's mood is like that. That you want to hide it from me, don't you? Okay, I'll break the pot. Then what will you hide? Even the very pot with which you are hiding everything from me, I'm going to break it. Nati bhandam bhinati. And after dravyalabe sagraha kubito. After hearing all these, what do they call this situation at home with this pot breaking, distribution of the yogurt, butter, everything, and the noise, breaking the pots, everything, Gopi comes running. When Gopi comes running, at that time, dravyalabe sagraha kubito, Krishna is saying, I'm not only happy with you, I'm not happy with the house. With the whole house, I'm not happy. Sagraha, graha kupito, it says in the Bhagavad. Graha kupito means I'm angry with this house. Ya upakroshyato kan goes and pinches the bum of that little baby and walks out from there. So, what does this verse has to say to us? This verse is a big message in the Bhagavad. This is the conclusion of the many great personalities on this verse. What they're saying here is that when Krishna sends us here, He has sent us here with a purpose. With a purpose. He says to us that you go to the world and then you start your spiritual life and develop Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is bhakti. Isn't it? Develop bhakti. And that is the cream, butter. And when you create that butter inside, I will come and steal it. I'll come and steal it. And here, just like butter is diluted inside in the milk, isn't it? It's already there in the milk. Similarly, if you just churn the milk, you won't get the butter, isn't it? You have to put some little bit of yogurt or anything into the milk, culture, into it to make it yogurt. And then you have to churn it to get the butter, isn't it? So here, so what is that culture, the culture you are throwing it into that milk is salsangam. Through salsangam, you realize this, and through salsangam, you have to pour that culture into that milk, into the milk. And then what will happen? The milk will turn into yogurt, isn't it? Then you have to churn that yogurt and from that butter will come. And if we do that, then Krishna will come and take that butter and go away from heart. He will take that and run away from inside. So we have been sent here to create that butter inside us, which is bhakti. That is the hidden meaning of that verse. Is to develop bhakti inside is the purpose of being here. Instead of doing that, suppose we didn't do that. Instead what we have done, we didn't create bhakti, we didn't create the butter inside. If you simply absorb in making money, enjoying the senses and living a life of for the sake of sense gratification and feeling happiness in that, one day, sooner or later, Krishna, what he did to the baby, this will happen. Krishna will smash the whole thing down. It will not last long. This is the message in that. Ya upakroshya thogan. That baby, it is due to the anger towards the house Krishna has done that to that baby. To show that I am angry with you all in the house. Everyone in the house, not only with the gopi for hiding the butter, with everyone in the house. That's that message. That's why that verse is very famous in the Bhagavadam. So, you can imagine that without Krishna consciousness, with our own plans we keep on going on in this world, thinking that I will adjust this, I'll adjust that, manage this, manage that. This is all our false ego it is, nothing else. And to accept that Krishna is the goal, there is no other goal here. Krishna has sent us here for the purpose. And realizing that, utilizing the life or realizing that truth, and go through Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, and to understand what Krishna is expecting from us to do, that's more important than all our other things what we do in this world. Other things what we do in this world. So that is the point Krishna is making here. So if the not created that butter, what will Krishna do? Griha gubidaha, it says that. So he will disturb everything. So you will notice that if you do not endeavor in the direction of bhakti, if things can go such wrong that problems will start coming up in the life, in family problems, one problem or the other. If not, if there is no family problem, body will start giving you trouble. And if either in the form of diseases or in various ways, it will remind you first, you have not come here for this purpose, rather for developing Krishna consciousness or spiritual life. So you have not come here and you have not got a healthy body to drink a lot of sweet rice. That's what it is, the message. Till they say, lot of sweet rice. But often we will forget that. Even after taking sannyasam, you can forget that. You can forget that. So once, it's an interesting story about that. Tapavana Swamiji, he was wandering around in the Himalayas for a very long period of time. 30-40 years he spent in the up right on the mountains. In the Himalayas he used to wander. Those days there was no facility to walk there. And he found it was very, very difficult. But he wanted to stay away from the world and live in that association of the sages and the great personalities who lives in the Himalayas. Their association he was seeking for. That in one occasion he came to Rishikesh. And in Rishikesh there is a lot of this lot of sannyasis come to Rishikesh. They live there, many come from other places. Rishikesh is always a place where many sannyasis come. And quite often, big business people, they will distribute prasadam for the sannyasis and others in Rishikesh. It's quite common. Laddu, jalebi, and because sannyasis doesn't get any opportunity. And these businessmen, they got a lot of money. So they want to get rid of all their sinful money, wrong way acquired money also somewhere. They want to get rid of that, so they will give that to them. Often you will see, in Rishikesh alone actually you don't have to even struggle very hard to get some prasadam. There's so many ashrams there. Somebody will give you something to eat, and if you are lucky, you will get all these nice things, halwa, puri, everything there is given. So when you go there, you will see this, that thing happened. So one day, Tapavana Swamiji is writing about that experience in Rishikesh. He said that he says it's like this. In from time immemorial, from Vedic time onwards, this fourth ashram, which one sannyasa ashram, was given in a highest respect. Sannyasa ashram was given highest respect. Why? Because you have given up everything, isn't it? You have no more plans for any enjoyment in this world. No money, no shelter, completely dependent on Krishna. That is that sannyasram's greatness. That means you have totally surrendered to Krishna, properly surrendered to Krishna. No money, no bank account, no credit cards, nothing. You have nothing. You are completely dependent on Krishna. You are living in this world in that way. And that means you have given up all your possessions in this world. Home, family, children. These are the places where we normally take shelter, isn't it? All that shelter you have thrown away. You didn't want any of those things. But someone, some businessman has sent some 500 laddus to distribute. And these sannyasis are fighting each other for the laddu. There. Tapavana Swamiji writes, you have given up all other things and have come here. And you are fighting for this one laddu, to get this laddu. This is the life. This is how life is, isn't it? So, the same thing, Krishna has sent us here with a very, very high purpose. To realize something and to escape from here once for all and not to come back here. And what do we do? we are running after something which is too silly to acquire in this world, and finding shelter in that, and feeling that this is my job here, I've been sent here. I give importance to that more than the realizing the self. So that is what Krishna is saying here. You will see in the Bhagavatam the importance of this body spoken. Brahma saying this here. Srishtva Purani Vividhani Ajayalma Shaktyam Drishtvan Sirin Sripapashun Kagadam Shamal Syan Taisteira Dushtakhdaya Purusham Vidhaya Brahma Valoka Dishnam Mudamapadeva. You will see in the Bhagavatam in the 11th canto, we discussed this verse before when we were going, it's in the 11th canto. I think it is in the Brahma Sutti or after that it comes somewhere in the it's a very important verse that Srishtva Purani Vividhani Ajayatma Shaktya Purushan Sarin Sripapashun Gagatham Shamalsyan Taistai Radushtakradaya Purusham Vidhaya Brahmava Loka Dishanam Udamava Deva. That to glorify this body, Uddhava talks about this, I think. Uddhava says that there is no other body, because after creating all other different bodies, Brahma was not happy because no other body had the capacity to do self-inquiry, to realize the self. The self-realization is only possible in the human body, isn't it? That is why it is spoken like that. So many other, Vrikshan, Sarin, the tree's body, Sripapashun, Kagadam, Shamalsyan, aquatics, plants, trees, creepers, all kinds of animals, they were all created. And no other body was capable, it is the 9th chapter, the 11th canto, verse 28, that all these other body, after creating all the different bodies, Adushta Hridaya, he was not satisfied. He felt that something is not right. I haven't created a body which is capable of realizing the... See, looking from Brahma's point of view, that is more important for Brahma. Brahma is not bothered whether you're making a lot of money here or not. That's not in Brahma's calculation. Brahma's calculation is, that's the verse number 28. Have I created a body which is capable of realizing the self? That's what Brahma took into consideration. And no other body has been able to do that. Taiste adushta hridaya. He was unhappy about that. Purusham vidhaya. But when he created us, human body, and he found that Brahmava loka dishanam udamava deva, he got extremely happy. Why? He found out this particular body what he has created has got all the faculties necessary for self-realization. The senses, the mind, the intelligence, and the combination, the whole package, is perfect for self-realization. So he felt happy after creating the human body, says here in the Indian Bhagavatam. So you can see that this is the story about this body, Taistai Adushta Hridaya Purusham Vidhaya Brahmavaloka Dishanam Udamava Deva. So he felt happy in that way. And Krishna felt happy, Brahma felt happy, and he thought that they will all go and realize the self. That's what he thought when he sent us here. But so Krishna sent us here in that way, but instead of that, simply holding on to the body and thinking that let me enjoy the body, let me live in this body, let me settle down here. If you do that, what will Krishna do? Krishna will do the same pinching business what he did to the baby. He will do that pinching. And now and then he will start pinching you first. It is that pinching which comes in the form of diabetes, blood pressure, and what else? All other illnesses. It's all that pinching because you're not doing it enough. That's what it is. It will see coming like this in different forms. It will start coming like this. So every time when an illness comes, because otherwise it's very difficult. You can say it's karma and all that, but at the same time there is also the other element who decides these things, that the reaction for this karma is this disease. Karma may be there, but at the same time it is that pinching what Krishna has done to the baby is this pinching to our body. Krishna is pinching in this way through these different ways. And it also comes in the different problems in the family and things like that. It all comes in that way. So that is all Krishna's pinching. Krishna is reminding us that if there is no distress, there won't be devotees in this world. That's also there. If there is no distress, there won't be any devotees. Ishasya kripaya dukkham agamishri dehinam bhogeshu viradim dhanyam tasmat dukkham na grahayet. This is a statement in the Yoga Vasishtam. He says here, ishasya kripaya dukkham. Distress comes because of Krishna's grace. Kripaya dukkham agamishyasi dehinam. For those who have got material bodies, all of us, dehi, agamishyasi dehinam. They get this dukkham, because distress, because of ishasya hi kripaya, Krishna's mercy, that is. Bhogeshu viradim dhatum tasma dukkham na garhayet. Idea is that you don't get absorbed in sense enjoyment. Bhogeshu viradim dhatum. Somehow or the other, that sense enjoying nature has to go away from us. And tasma dukkham na garhayet. Therefore, you should not curse distress for distress when it comes. You should not curse the distress, you should learn to tolerate it. That is expected from us. Sometimes you can see when you get distressed, you curse everybody, isn't it? Why this has happened to me? Why me, they say. Isn't it? Why me? Why me? That's not the right approach, because you're not able to use that to change your attention away from the world to the self. So, bhogeshu viradim dhanyam. So, in order that to develop that vairagyam inside, that is why Krishna is giving this distress. So, therefore, dukkham, when your distress comes, you should not speak insultingly about it, about that distress. It may come in the form of sickness or some other distress. Anything can come in life, is it not? In so many ways, crisis can come in life, but never to criticize that or condemn that. The distress that has come. So, dukkham or distress is a message from Krishna. Krishna is always saying to us, I am here, don't forget me. That's the message. That's all. Because if I am only this body, if you just take, I am only this body, I have to become perfect inside this body. If I am the body, you say, I should be able to become perfect in this body. Isn't it? In other words, if I enjoy my senses, different kinds of sensual happiness, and after that, I must have good health as well, after that. And in spite of all that, my experience is that it is impossible to become, remain healthy and perfect in the bodily platform. Even without enjoying senses, it is difficult to remain in a healthy state in the body. Suppose even if you are very regulated in life, very disciplined in life, good habits, eating habits, sleeping habits, everything, refraining from all kinds of sensual activities, in spite of that, this body can get sick. So, it is at that time, Krishna is saying here, that perfection will never be possible in the body. Even if you have controlled everything, it is not possible. Because it is not complete. Body is not complete. It's only a part of you. It's a part of you. So, therefore, no science is perfect. Isn't it? No science is perfect. And that is why in Vedam also, except this Brahma Vidya, everything else is not given that much importance. For example, you take Ayurveda and astrology. And there are so many things like that, isn't it, in the Vedam. They are also in the Vedam. But Ayurveda and all, even when they teach Ayurveda, they will tell you first, remember always that this body is not perfect. That is how that science is. Same thing with astrology also. Astrology is a great science, but it's 50% truth and 50% lie. That's how it is. You can't put all your faith in astrology and say that this is everything. No, it won't work. It won't work. Astrology has got that limitation because it's not a perfect science like Brahma Vidya. You can understand what why it is like that, isn't it? Brahma Vidya, because it is related to Nitya Vastu, permanent thing, it will remain perfect. All other sciences related to temporary thing, like the body, like the world, like your experiences in Maya. Everything is within Maya you are talking about, Ayurveda or astrology. They can never remain perfect. It is not possible. You may do so many things. Say, for example, you follow the astrology route, you will do a lot of things. But not necessary that your final results will be perfect. You can't put 100% faith in that. Although astrology is a science, it has got a lot of meaningful conclusions also. They are capable of predicting many things and all that. But still, it is not a perfect science like Brahma Vidya. Brahma Vidya is perfect because the topic of discussion is perfect. It is eternal and it is permanent. Nitya Vastu it is. All others are Anitya Vastu, therefore it's not perfect. This is the reason behind it. That is why they say that that this half-truth and half-lie is astrology. Right? It's sometimes more dangerous than the full lie. Because we'll put some faith into it and you'll go after that and waste a lot of time behind it. A lot of people do these things and it is not unusual. For example, in the olden times, they had much better astrologers than what it is today. Astrologers who had a lot of sadhana, upasana, and they have much greater experts in the astrology. So when the kings went, before they went into war, they consulted astrologers. And sometimes it so happened that after they consulted astrologers and they had the perfect timing given to them to start the war, and they lost the war. And then they used to call the astrologer responsible for that. So he has to be very careful what he's going to say to them. Isn't it? And astrologers had sometimes to lose their life because they couldn't predict properly. And there were unknown reasons behind it. That there's a books all about astrology. If you read that, you will understand the limitations of astrology. Where astrology has its own limitations. But certain things, what they can predict are marvelous things. They can say also, some capable astrologers who had that good upasana in them, who had studied and practiced it properly. So here you can see from the same principle that this astrology and the science also, to a large extent, you can take it up to some level. Science, you can see how it fails. Sometimes with all your science and technology, you develop a machine and that the machine fails. Is it not? Somewhere failure happens with that machine. And with all your perfection in science, machines do fail. Because it has its limitations. Something goes wrong in the mechanism that things can fail. It's not perfect, in other words. They will also acknowledge that, scientists also say. Some of them will make 90%, 95%, 99% may work, but it can fail. So what will happen is that when you take all these things seriously, astrology, Ayurveda and all that, you take it too seriously, you will develop all your faith in that, and finally all your life you will waste on these things. You will go by running after that. And lying in that astrology and Ayurveda, you will start feeling distressed in life. You'll feel, go through the distress in life. So, all these science has got its limitations. That's the important point to remember. That, okay, nobody condemns astrology or Ayurveda. They're part of the Vedam. But at the same time, there are limitations. That's what we have to know from astrology and Ayurveda. So, because you are thinking that your body is going to be perfect. It is with this understanding you are keep on pushing the Ayurveda to get the answer for that. There are many illnesses which Ayurveda also finds it difficult to cure. Certain illnesses. And there are other factors which influences that result of the treatment. For example, certain karmam has some very drastic effects on the illnesses, certain illnesses. A cure may not come from the medicine, it has to come from other means. Other means Manimandra Aushadhadi. Aushadham is medicine. There's only one way. Through chanting certain mantra, you may be able to come out of certain illnesses. Certain illnesses you may have got through certain prarabdham, heavy prarabdham. Once it so happened in a place in Salem, in Tamil Nadu, a very wealthy businessman, he had some illness, he couldn't eat any food. He just couldn't eat any food. As soon as a lot of treatment, he spent a lot of money going to best hospitals and doctors, everything treated, nobody could do anything. Finally, because he became very helpless and his situation was getting worse day by day, some of the family members decided to go and approach someone who had siddhis in him. Siddhi means who has acquired yoga, Aishwarya siddhis. So approached him, and that person told him, tell him to stop all this treatment. Every day, let him feed some hungry people food. Because this Siddha could see that in his previous life, he has committed some severe, heavy things by not offering food to other people and being miserly about it. And he says to him that let him feed this for about 41 days or so. Simply, with all his wealth, make first-class prasadam, give it to feed the children and every guest who comes there, feed them very well, and he will get out of it, and that has happened to him. There are many instances like that. So you can see there, in certain instances, medicine cannot cure. There are other reasons which we don't know. It is unknown, it is. Lord, we think that every disease is through medicine we want to cure, isn't it? That's not possible. That's not possible. Unless we know what has actually caused the disease. And there will be different forces working behind it, which we are unaware of. That's the important point. So the first thing is that if you keep thinking that body is perfect, then you are in trouble. Because it is from that concept you are trying to do everything else. Whether it's through astrology or whether it's through Ayurveda, whatever it is, that you are thinking the body is perfect, you expect the body to be perfect. But body is never perfect. That's the first thing to know. So, therefore, if you continuously think that body is never going to be perfect, and you think that you are this body, then never you will be able to reach any state of happiness in any time. So, the first realization is, I'm not this body. I'm not this body. That is necessary to establish that. And secondly, body is not mine. Body is not mine. And thirdly, body is not meant for my use, enjoyment, in other words. These three things, if you constantly remind us ourselves, then all bodily problems, when they come, to a large extent, you can move away from the body by strengthening this understanding inside. Strengthening this understanding inside. That is why these three things are spoken. I'm not this body. Body is not mine. Body is not of my enjoyment. So, if these three things are clear in us, other things will get in due course of time a lot easier. Because these three things are not clear within us, we don't have that in deep level, that understanding. Therefore, all the problems. So, if you have doubt about the body, that I'm not this body, if you say, then you have to spend some time and analyze the body. Body never say, I am this body, isn't it? Body never says that. So, there is something inside this body which says, I am inside. That is that Spurana. Krishna calls it as the Spurana, isn't it? Spurana is that. So, for example, there are many people who don't have hands, who don't have legs, especially soldiers who come back from the battlefield, they lost their hands or legs. But you don't see any reduction in their awareness, isn't it? Bodham. Avabodham, there is no reduction. They are complete full, as much as anybody else is, isn't it? So, therefore you can see that hand or legs, what is broken and come off from their body, if you take it back and put it back on its place, and even if you put it back there, it will not work. It doesn't work. It is still jadam, dead matter. That is, isn't it? That broken part will not say, I am somebody. It will lie there. So any part of the body, if you cut it off and take it away, still that removed part will not say I am. It cannot say. Awareness is not there in that part, isn't it? Awareness is not there in their part. So, so you can see in the yoga process, that means Patanjali's yoga system, they have Sahasraram, it's called, on the topmost part, Sahasrara Chakra. That's Sahasraram. They say, when the in the Kundalini rises up to Sahasraram, Kundalini is that force which goes through the Sushumna and all, it comes up to Sahasraram. When it comes to Sahasraram, it says there, you have reached the final point. That's what the yogis say. Yani says, no. Says, it comes to Sahasraram, then it comes back to the heart, Hrit. What Krishna says is Hrit. Patanjali says, right up to Sahasraram. But from Sahasraram, it has to come to Hrit. Hrit is the place where Atma's presence is in the body. You know that word, Sarvasya Chaham Hridi. Hridi Sanyavishto. That Hrit. That's that. Ishara Sarvabhudanam Hrit Deshe. Arjuna Krishna. So that Hrit. That is where presence, Krishna's presence is here in the Hrit. Not in the Sahasraram or any of the other chakra. So, when this has happened that Sahasraram is in the head, at the top of the head. So it is like this, that a person is sitting there and he is sleeping. When he sleeps and when he gets, finally what happens? The head falls. What does that indicate? That indicates that the if the Hrit, where Atma is present, that's the only place which can stay in Sushupti state without undisturbed. It can stay undisturbed. If it was in the Sahasraram, head shouldn't fall, head should stay straight. Because of the presence of Atma in the Hrit, heart doesn't drop. You will... The head drops to the heart, actually, when you are in deep sleep state. That is their answer to that. So none of the other places is the center of the presence of the soul. So you can see here, any shastram which you have only realized through intelligence, that will leave you at a particular point. With the brain it is gone, or with the mind it goes away. But this place, Hrit, what Krishna calls as the Hridisthanam, that is the place where everyone in the world will point out, me, they will say like this, isn't it, me, will point out to himself, that means to his own heart he will point out. I won't say me like here, I won't say me here, but I will point out. All over the world it is like that. So, my presence, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, real presence of Krishna inside is here. Suppose somebody has told me something, you have done such a wrong thing. I say, I have not done that. My hand will automatically go here, to the heart, in a natural way. So, it's 4 o'clock. We'll have a short break.
केदोदर्पणमर्जनं वामहादाराभिनिर्वाणम् श्रेयकैदवचन्द्रिकाविदरणम् विद्यावतु जीवनम् आर्द्रं बुद्धिवर्धनं प्रतिपदपूर्णामृतास्वादनम् सर्वाकासवनं वरं विजयते श्रीकृष्णसङ्कीर्तनम् नामकारि बहुधा निज सर्वशक्ति तत्रापिदानीमिनास्मरणेन काला एतादृशीतः कृपा भगवान् ममापि दुर्दैव मीदृशमिकः जनिनानुरागाः तृणारवीषु नीचेन करोरवीसहिष्णुना अमानिनावमानदेन कीर्तनीय सदा हरि मदनं न जनं न सुन्दरीं कवितां वा जगदीशकामये मम जन्मनि जन्मनीश्वरि भवदान्भक्तिरहेत्वये ऐ नन्दतनुजकिङ्करं पतितामां विषमे भवाम्बुदौ
So, our Vekti Bodham, Vekti Bodham means this awareness that's hiding there, that's that place. Krishna mentions that in a few places in the Bhagavad Gita, but if you at least these two, three verses, if you look, you can see Hrit Sthanam, Hrit Sthanam, Krishna says that, Hrit, Hrit, he keeps saying that. Isn't it? Ishvara Sarvabhutanam, Hrit Deshe, Arjuna Trishtari, that Hrit. Similarly, the other one also, Sarvasya Chaham, Hriti Sanyivishto, Matas Pradir Jnanam Apohanam Chak, that verse also. So, that place, if you look into Putana, Putana was killed, Krishna killed Putana. At that time what happened, what he mentions there, then in Putana Moksham, Putana's liberation, if you read, that is the 60th chapter. In the 10th canto. Eleventh verse. If you look there, you'll see there. Sa munja munjala midi prabhashini nishpidhya mana akhila jiva marmani vivritta netrai charano bujo muhu prasvinna gathrakshi pradirirodaham. Unlike all other killing, where Krishna killed in different demons, in different ways, Putana is the only person where Krishna touched that spot directly, isn't it? What did Krishna do? Krishna sucked through the breast and the life air came from that spot where it is present. Sa munja munjala midi prabhashini, while Putana was, when life air was sucked out from there, from that spot, she immediately responded to that. She said, Sa munja munja, leave me alone, leave me alone. She was so frightened about that. Idi prabhashini. Why? Nishpidhyamana akhila jiva marmani. In Putana Moksham you will see this. Jiva Marmani. Marmani means the Marmasthanam. Marmasthanam means there are certain points in the body, in the Yoga Shastram, where if you touch, they are very sensitive points. And this is one of them. Jiva Marmani. Jiva sensitive point is this group. So, Shobhramashi says there, Nishpidhyamana akhila Jiva Marmani. That Jivam is here. Jiva is here. And it is there. He was pulled out. Jiva was pulled out. Her Jiva was pulled out from there itself. That means she felt that pain very strongly and she had to leave the body at that time. Vivrutya netrai charano bujo muhu. Eyes all became, you know, it came out when the death happens like the way it happened. And prasvinnagatra kshipati rirodaha. And the whole body became fell down like the banana plant falls down the, when it is affected by a strong wind. In the same way it fell, prasvinagatra, and sweating everywhere, kshipati rirodaha, she started crying with such a amount of amount of noise. And here, what is important here is that Krishna is mentioned as Krishna Vande Jagal Guru, isn't it? It's the supreme spiritual master is Krishna. So a spiritual master gives this initiation, Diksha, in various ways. Through looking, he can offer initiation. Chakshur Diksha, it is called. Then through instructions, you can give Diksha. By hand, through touching, Diksha can be given. Then for the feet, it can be given. But Putana's good fortune was that where Putana's false ego is concentrated, where the concentration of this false ego and all her vasanas are, all the bad vasanas what Putana had and all her ego was, that was focused here, isn't it? There Krishna touched and gave the initiation to her. She was initiated here, which is an unusual initiation. Normally, initiation is done through, in the modern institutional setup, it is different. There you set up a fire and you saying that I have initiated, you know. But if you look into whole Vedic system, you will see there are various ways of initiations. There is a whole article about that, you can read there. They give name to it. Kukuda Diksha. Kukuda Diksha means like a hen. Diksha is given. Tortoise Diksha. Based on different animals' names it's given. And it is a reason behind all that. Why it is called in that way. Tortoise, for example, comes to the land, lays the eggs, then it goes into the water and then meditates on the eggs which has come from its body. And the babies comes out from the tortoise, babies comes out from that. Due to the power of that. So, when a Diksha is given like that, it's called Tortoise Diksha. And similarly, Kamatam, it's called. And then, there is also Diksha in various other Padasparsham, through the feet. Lord Shiva gave to Sundaramurti, through the feet, Diksha. He asked for Diksha like that. Mahabali was given Diksha with the feet. Vamanamurti gave with the feet. So, Pada Diksha, it's called. Diksha means initiation, yeah. Pada Diksha for Mahabali. Mahabali, Pada Diksha. And some other devotees, Krishna put their hands and gives Diksha. Like Dhrumaharaj and others. Krishna touched their cheek with the conch shell and this knowledge woke up inside. Spiritual self-realization happened. So that is another Diksha. Like this, Diksha is given in different ways by the spiritual master to the disciple. By the spiritual master to the disciple. But nobody has been given a Diksha like this, what Pudana had. The right place where her false ego, that's where our false ego. False ego is also coming from the same place where this awareness is coming. They come from the same location. Same location where false ego is coming, the awareness is coming of our I am this awareness, aham asmi, aham asmi, that awareness is coming. This is from the same place this false ego is also appearing. So Krishna decided to give her initiation there itself, at that right spot where false ego is there. And that is why it mentions that through from that place itself, Krishna pulled out that false ego from her heart, from that place. And so Hrid is the same place where false ego is also hiding. Like everything else. Matta Smriti Jnana Abohanam Cha. All of them is hiding there. Smriti Jnanam Abohanam, everything is hiding. You can see that verse, Krishna is saying, Sarvasya Chaham Hridi Sannivishto Mattaha. Matta is that Ahangaram. Smriti Jnanam Abohanam. All of them are present in that very same spot. I'm going to say there. So, that is where you inquire about the truth also. Inquiry of the truth also. So, I am not the body, I am not this head, I am not the hand, legs, nothing. But if you ask it, is there in the heart? Answer is that, or it is in the body? No, it is like this. They have spoken about a place in the body where it is present. That's all. This also will change later when you realize your pure identity. Because this point is only spoken to realize within the body. But after that, there is another stage when you live beyond the body, just like Shukha Brahmarshi's case. When you are one with the full pure consciousness, there is no body there anymore. Isn't it? It's a stage after that. When in the Bhagavadam, when they say Sarvabhuta Hridayam Munimana Tosmi means that by now he has become in everyone's heart, which is a little different stage, isn't it? So, Hridayam it's called Hrit Ayam Tishtade. So, Hrit itself is Krishna Swarupam, and that is a place where Sadvastu, that Satyavastu is present. In the Bhagavadam, if you look, you will see the same thing. Sadhyo hrid yavarudhyetra kridabhi shushroshubhi takshana. You remember that word? Yes, dharma projita kaitavottra paramo nurmat saranam satam medyam vastava matra vastu shivadam tapatrayon mulanam. Srimad Bhagavade Mahamuni krde kimvabare ishvare sadhyo hrid yavarudhyetra kridabhi hridi. Again, that is hrid. So there is in the Bhagavadam and Bhagavad Gita, this is the place where inquiry has to happen. Krishna's finding Krishna here, that is the goal. Sandhyohrit Havarudyadetra Kritibi Shushroshubi Talkshanat. When Talkshanat, immediately when you hear Srimad Bhagavadam, this is the beginning of the Bhagavadam, isn't it? What happens? Sandhyohrit Havarudyadetra Kritibi. Krishna walks in to that place and he sits there. And Shushroshubhi Talchanan. But as you hear Srimad Bhagavadam, Krishna sits there and clean up that place. Cleaning up means your false ego gets destroyed. That's the cleaning up. That false ego inside gets destroyed by Krishna's presence there. It gets destroyed. And realize Krishna's presence there. In other words, starts realizing this Jiva, what we refer to now as Jiva, is not anymore Jiva, it is Atma. And the Atma is Krishna. That realization will come at that, and that comes at a much later date. So coming back to this, first thing, I'm not this body. Secondly, body is not mine. First thing, I'm not this body, which you have seen, that you cut the parts of the body and throw it away. They don't claim I'm the body. I am. Only I claim in the body. That is what the proof that I'm not this body. Even if you cut my hand or leg and throw it away, they are jadam then. Isn't it? So anything in this body is jadam. Only I can claim aham. I am awareness. Only the awareness which is independent of the body. That's the first thing. Secondly, body is not mine. Because reason is that whatever that's going on inside this body, I'm not even conscious of. I'm not even conscious of. Isn't it? So I'm saying it is my body. It's my body. I keep saying to everybody, it's my body. And except saying, it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean anything. As soon as I take the first morsel of food and I've eaten it, I don't know what happens after that. All I know that I've eaten the food. That's all it is, isn't it? What's happening in the throat? What's happening in the stomach? And what's happening in the rest of the whole process is unknown to me. I'm not conscious of anything. I'm just eaten it to cure my hunger. So, but still I'm saying it's my body I keep saying about this, isn't it? Similarly, if I get headache, I can take some medicine, that's all I know. But what the medicine is going to do, I don't know. Although we may have so many theories about it. But, so the machinery, how it works inside is unknown to me. So, except that I'm saying it's my body, nothing I understand what's going on inside this body, isn't it? I'm not conscious of anything. As I mentioned before, that if it is my body, if you remove something from my body inside, I should know about it. Doctors are capable of doing that. They take away some part from inside and you won't even know about it. And you say it's your body. So that itself shows that how limited your connection is with the body. It's very, very limited. Absolutely no connection with the body. We exist separately from the body. That understanding, we have to accept it. We have no other choice in that. In the sense that you can see by analyzing in this way, that you can see the connection with the body is very, very, very limited. Although we keep, because we've got used to thinking this, it's my body, I have to look after this body, I have identified with body so strongly, and therefore that problem. So, So similarly, none of the things what's happening inside this body, I am doing it. It's happening automatically, isn't it? Food goes in, it gets goes through all the different things what has to go through inside the body, and it goes out finally, and whatever I need from the food, the body extracts it itself without my knowledge. I'm not even conscious of anything what's happening when I have taken the food. Is it not? Only if it creates any problem, then I'll think about it, about the food. Otherwise, what? As long as the food goes in and I get energy to do the things what I want and it's not causing any problem, I don't complain about it. So that is, that indicates to us that body is not in your control. Body is not in your control. And similarly, breathing, this circulation of the blood and so many other things inside this body, practically you have no connection with it. It's all happening, functioning its own way, isn't it? And so that is why you mentioned that this in the Devi's Bhagavatam, it says, Yadevi sarvabhudeshu buddhirubena samsthita or shudharubena samsthita. Shudha means hunger, buddhi means intelligence. Nidrarubena samsthita, sleep, another thing. It comes, it does, and it comes and it goes away. And we say it is our body. How much control do we have on that? Even sleeping is concerned particularly. If it comes and if it takes over, you can't do anything about it. And you say it's your body. Isn't it? So it didn't come, and sometimes you can see when you say, oh, you want to get sleep, it won't come. That also, other side of it. Is it not? So, and you don't want sometimes to get to sleep, but in Salsangam you get sleep. Good sleep, because it comes there. So, none of them is in your control, practically. That's what it is saying here. And even if you take a lot of sleeping pills, sometimes it's difficult to get sleep. Isn't it? So, and times when you don't want the sleep, you get the sleep. Because all this is belongs to Prakriti. Prakriti is doing that. Prakriti is doing that. It decided that you have to have sleep now. And then she sends the agency, does the work, and you are falling. You just have to surrender. That's all we can do, isn't it? So that is why it says here that everything is Krishna's, not ours. Ours means ahankaram, isn't it? False ego. If I say it's mine, that means it's in my control. That means it's my false ego. That is why it mentions here that Vṛdha ahankaranam param. You will see in the Bhagavatam verse, Vṛdha ahankaranam param. That means we will keep saying that my body, due to my false ego. In practically, you have no control on this body. No control on this body. The next thing is Abhimanavuti. Abhimanavuti means this ego, operating the ego. Abhimanavuti says, what does Abhimanavuti say? Abhimanavuti means this Ahangaravuti. Ahangaravuti means that thought inside of false ego. What it does is that says to us that the body is for you. That's where it's coming from. How did we get to this understanding? Body is for me. I have to look after the body. It's my body. This is Ahangaram it is. You see, Ahangaram is not anything else. It is this identification of the body itself. So, as long as I am thinking that this body is for my happiness, it is not possible to become perfect and happiness, satisfaction and happiness in life. It's not possible. That is why if these three things, I'm not this body, body is not mine, body is not for my enjoyment. They are very important realizations one should cultivate within oneself to the extent possible. Because this has to come through by development only. We keep on practicing in this within our own life. Because there's so many situations can happen in life when you will be forced to identify with the body. And you can see all our anartham, all our misfortune comes from these three things. I'm this body, body is mine, body is meant for enjoyment. Only when these three things, when you take it in the wrong way, all the problems appears in life. So therefore, if these three things are realized, Krishna's point is already you are very close to self. We are very close to the realization of the self. So, because Atma is present in everyone and it is illuminating everyone, but what has happened to us is we have accepted something which is not Atma, which is not Atma, and I have identified with it as its mind, like the body. Body, that is what has happened. All what we have to do is to remove these things from inside, this misunderstanding. I am this body, body is mine, body is meant for enjoyment. If you remove these things from inside, what remains there is only Atma. What remains is Atma. So, Atma will always shine forth. So, you can see this also. Nobody is feeling that we will die one day. We are not feeling that. So many people are dying, and every day you are reading the paper and in the website, so many dying and going. I still think I won't die. Something happened to him, don't know what can I do about it. I'll be alright. There's something in me, I don't know about you, I also feel the same thing, that something tells me, I think everything is okay. You're only 65 or 66, that's a long way to go. Pension is only 68 or something. So you've got a long life to go. Sometimes people say like they are living up to 80 and 100 and all. I'm looking at that. I'm not looking at the one living at 60 or 55. I'm looking at the one living up to 80 and 90. So why is that? I'm not getting frightened about that. Lot of deaths I'm seeing. And even after going to the cemetery and getting the body burned, everything. And I'm coming back and still I'm thinking, oh, that something went wrong with him. That's why he died. Otherwise, this has happened. And sometimes you say, oh, after all, life is like that, isn't it? You'll make a statement like that and then come home after bathing and take a nice feast. That's the next thing to do, isn't it? And then good for a good sleep after that. A feast and a good sleep after that. So, what is this indicating is then that no matter how much the Prakriti frightens us, still, for a few days you may think about it, but then you will forget it. Then you will forget it. What is the reason? Reason is this. Actually, we don't have death. That is the problem. We really don't have death. In reality, there is no such thing called death. So, therefore, but because it's all mixed up with this body, and because body has got death, body has got death, and we are mixed up with this body, and therefore, this fear is coming. Sometimes, when you are in the bodily level, that is when the fear is coming. When you are in the spiritual platform, you don't feel that fear. Sometimes if you have a little bit of spiritual thoughts inside, then immediately that fear goes away about death. Because then you know that the fear is about the body. The death is for the body, isn't it? Because Atma will not allow that inside. Atma cannot allow that inside. Similarly, all impurities also, like we say, oh, I have got so many impurities in me, lust, anger, greed and envy and all of the prejudices and all that. So, that is also, is like this. It's only in the body and the mind. Atma doesn't have any of those impurities there either. So, sometimes you can see, this is particularly in India you will see this. Preachers who are preaching Christianity, they will address the audience, oh sinners, he addressed them like that. You, oh sinners, sinners, sinners. He addresses them like that, isn't it? So, and he will listen to all that when the priest is addressing them. But after that, when he comes out and you tell him that you are such a sinner, he won't like it. This, somehow or the other, it is like that. Because this sinful activity, the sinful consciousness and all that, it cannot go penetrate into the soul. He won't allow that. Atma doesn't agree with it that you are a sinner. It's only in the preaching process. He is addressing you, oh, you have committed so many sinful activities, you are such a sinful person. We also say that to people in the temple. Oh, he is so sinful, the karmis, they are so sinful. Karmi is not bothered. We are bothered more than the karmi. This is the funny side of it. Have you noticed that? We go preaching to people and we make judgments about everyone. There somebody is enjoying, especially or this when you go into places where there's a lot of these nightclubs and or people are in an enjoying mood all the time, isn't it? You go there and you tell them, all those people who are enjoying in their own way, sure they are doing. You tell them, you are so sinful, you are sinful. He is not feeling that. You are feeling more than him. Why is that? Because inside him, there is a force working, coming from the soul, knows very well that there cannot, any sin cannot touch that point. But when you are in the bodily level, mental platform, if you say to him, you are sinful and all that, it may have its some effect. But when he is a little bit separated from the body, it will not have any effect on him. So that is why you can see here that if you say to a person also, something is saying from inside that I am not sinful. I am not sinful, I am pure. So if you inquire in this way, you can see that Purna Vastu, perfect thing, Atma inside, is Sada Ubalabdham. Ubalabdham means it's already available to us. But somewhere there is a mix-up with this body. And that's where the problem starts here. So, if it gets mixed up with other things, for example, it is just like mixing up the darkness and the light. Something like that. And there you have to remove that darkness, and that light will shine on its own. There is nothing new to happen. So therefore, I am not this body. Body is not mine. And if I get that realization inside, that vastu inside has to come out in its proper way. But that is not an easy thing to happen. So that is why it mentions here that that when we start surrendering to Krishna, you see that in the Bhagavadam, there is a verse in the Bhagavadam, it's a very famous verse, Kayena vacha manasendriyarva udhyatmanava prakrute subhava karoti yadyat sagalam parasmai narayanayeti samarpayami. What it means is that every time, every day, after every karma, every work, what we do, it should be offered to Krishna. Reason being that through the body and as well as the mind, whatever we are doing, everything offered to Krishna. What it means is that I am not taking responsibility for anything. Body is Krishna's, mind is Krishna's, therefore the karma also must be Krishna's. That is the reason. You see that verse in the Bhagavad Gita, which says that ahankaram na kataham iti manyate. That verse, in practical life, is this verse. Every time when an action is performed, if it is offered to Krishna, because the logic is there, body does not belong to you, it is Krishna's body. Body is not mine, body is Prakriti. Prakriti means Krishna's body. Mind is also Krishna's body. So if body and the mind, everything is Krishna's, then the action that is happening through the body is also Krishna's, not ours, isn't it? Why we should come in there? That is where Ahankaram steps in and says, oh no, it's mine. I've done everything. But logically you can see that it is all Krishna. So to reiterate that, to stress that again and again, we have to chant these words. Kaina vacha manasendriyarva. All it's saying is that with my body, with my words, with my mind, with my intelligence, senses, everything, due to my nature, due to my prakriti, prakriti subhaval, due to my prakriti subhavam, whatever karma I have done in this world, karodi yadyat, sagalam parasmai, I offer it to you. I am not taking response. It's not me. Idam na mama. I am not the doer. That's what that verse is saying. That's all it is doing. Practically what it is saying is not taking the ownership for the karma. So this is the consciousness of that surrender. The process of surrender is like that. Constantly handing it over back to Krishna. Because body is Krishna's, mind is Krishna's, so the action also must be Krishna's, not mine, isn't it? So that is, having said that, he says here that the so if I'm not the body, not the mind, not the intelligence, then who am I? Isn't it? So what is my nature? And this is what we are talking about. And when you start inquiring about it, this, that is when the interesting side comes. interesting side comes and you start inquiry. So that is a long story which we will continue tomorrow. Because it's already 5 to 5. All glory to Srila Prabhupada.
All glory to Srila Prabhupada.
Srila Prabhupada.